desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, in the darkness of a Halloween night. Thank you for being here, everybody. This is the 2003 annual edition of Ghost to Ghost AM. Always on Halloween night. I want to thank George and Premier, of course, for the opportunity to host the annual Ghost to Ghost program. And I want to remind the rest of the audience that I'm also here on Saturday and Sunday nights now. I don't know if you knew that or not, but I am here on Saturday and Sunday nights. Matter of fact, tomorrow night is going to be Whitley Strieber, and then Sunday night is going to be John Lear. John Lear has not done a radio interview in many years. John Lear is the son of Bill Lear, who invented the Lear jet. And of course, John is many hours in commercial jet aircraft, and boy, does he have a lot to say. So that's going to occur Saturday, Whitley, and he's going to be talking about the sun and an awful lot of things that happened to him early in his life that he's just discovered. Very, very interesting stuff. And then Sunday, John Lear. So if your radio station doesn't get Saturday, Sunday version of Coast, call them up and say, hey, what's up? You know, get a Saturday and Sunday. Now, Ghost to Ghost. There will be no guest tonight. This program is entirely caller-driven. Either I will call you because you have sent me a ghost story and your phone number, or you will call me either way. The subject is only one, and that's ghosts. Are they an important subject? Yes. Not just tonight, but 365 days a year, because, you know, it may answer the question, the biggest question really in our life, and that is, do we have eternal souls which survive our physical death, inevitable and crawling up minute by minute for all of us? Is there something that comes after this? It's the biggest question in the world. So is it an important subject? Yes. And those stories that I want from you are the very best, nothing but the best, the scariest, the most frightening of all the stories that might be told, because I know they've well, how do I know so many have happened? Because I have received thousands of emails and ghost stories. I've selected a few, and we will take, of course, from the phone some number tonight. But is it an important question? Is there any more important question in this life than whether we have, whether that's it, whether it's the worms in and out, or whether there's actually something that comes after this? Well, the stories are going to roll tonight. In a moment, we begin Ghost to Ghost. If you have big orange Halloween cojones, you might want to turn the lights off and sort of provide a set and setting for what's to come, because that's part of it. And people do enjoy being scared. I enjoy being scared, and so I turn out the lights, and this program generally scares the hell out of me. Shall we begin? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi.
What is your name?
My name's Virginia.
Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Virginia, good morning to you. Where are you?
I'm in Arkansas.
In Arkansas.
Uh-huh.
And what do you, well, fire away.
Okay. This happened 2 years ago. It was the end of summer, and I had taken my 9-year-old son down to Galveston. The idea was to, you know, lay in the sun and relax.
Sure.
We'd been there a couple of days. We were staying in a beach house, and I decided to take him down to the shoreline to look for shells and things.
I always did that.
Uh-huh. And the low tide was at midnight. So we walked down to the shore, and we just had one little regular flashlight. And the moon was about a quarter moon coming up in the east, and it was really sort of surreal, even at the beginning. We had walked east for a long ways, and weren't really finding anything, and you know how kids are. He was real jumpy and, you know, thought the crabs were going to bite his toes off or something.
You know what I think, Virginia? I think when something is about to happen, you said it was surreal. It felt surreal.
It was.
There's a kind of a prequel, you know, a sort of a something hanging in the air before something happens.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I kept looking for something, you know, and he wanted to go back after about the first 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
After we'd been down there about an hour with me saying, no, let's just walk a little bit more, I had heard him say the words, Mom, what's that? About a million times already. But he said it again, and it sounded different. You know, his voice changed. And I stood up and, you know, straightened up and shined the light down the beach. We were headed back west at this time. And I saw feet, you know, and as I took a few more steps, you know, there was, you know, the rest of this man laying right where the water meets the sand.
Laying?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Laying on his back, his feet towards us, laying right where the water meets the sand.
Uh-huh.
And so
apparently alive or dead?
Well, it was hard to tell at this point.
Okay.
And so to answer my son's question, I said, well, you know, it's a man laying in the surf. Well, you know how when you shine your light on somebody, you instinctively, you just kind of have this oops reaction, and you shine the light right back off.
Right.
You know, you're sort of embarrassed that
you shined
it right in their face.
Sure.
Well, we walked, you know, a few more steps, and I would kind of, you know, do the light back over that way. And was trying to kind of keep my son behind me. You know, I call it being in mommy mode.
Yep.
But we got, you know, a few more feet closer and then a few more feet closer. And I was gradually, you know, looking back over there to see if he had moved or anything. And he hadn't. And, you know, I was beginning to know that it wasn't a man just laying in the surf. I couldn't be that lucky. And the last time I shined the flashlight over there, I saw a wave come over his head, and he made no response, and his arms kind of floated funny, and I knew that he was dead.
Uh-huh.
Well, I told my son that we needed to go, and I had been, you know, plodding along so slow, you know, that it scared him, you know, that, you know,
how about we need to go call 911?
Well, I didn't say that, and I just said, we got to go.
Right.
and I, you know, grabbed all my stuff and, you know, hopped. There was a long lot of seaweed that year, you know, and you kind of have to jump over that.
Yeah.
And he said, well, why? And I said, well, we need to get back to the house. And right when I said, we have to go, I heard this man's voice clearly. I mean, just like I can hear you now.
Yes.
I heard him say, no, not yet.
No, not yet.
No, not yet. And I thought, what? You know, I was like between him and my son. And like I said, I call it being in mommy mode, and I went anyway, you know, and I kept thinking, you know, I should run right up there and check this guy, you know, try to help him. But I don't know how to explain the feeling that you have as a mother. I did not want my son
involved in anything.
No.
Of course not. And so
no.
Then what did you do?
Well, without breaking into a dead run, we went back to the beach house. I called 911,
right.
Put my son on the couch. The fire trucks went roaring by. I will say they have great response time.
Mm-hmm.
Beach patrol, city, county, everybody was there. And so I got my son situated, and I went back down there. Beach patrol told me that they hadn't even attempted CPR and that I shouldn't feel bad about that at all, that I hadn't, you know, because they didn't try. He had been in the water too long, and yes, he was definitely dead. And they, you know, of course, took my entire life history, And we stood there and talked for a while, and a search and rescue guy and one of the other cops pulled the guy up out of the water, and, you know, and laid him on the beach, and I went home. Well, nothing like this has ever happened to me. And, you know, there I was alone, and when I got back to the beach house, my son was sound asleep, and I made a couple of phone calls. I'm sure I sounded hysterical to these people.
Sure.
And I sat on the porch, and you know that down on the coast, the wind is always blowing. And I sat there, and I was just crying and crying, and I was, you know, like talking aloud and just really just focused on, you know, mentally and aloud, who were you and what happened?
Yes.
Because down on the beach, they had sort of, one of the cops had said, well, what way is the current going? And one of the men had said, well, he was probably from the state park. And I immediately knew that wasn't right for some reason. I just knew that wasn't right.
Any more contact with this man or what's left of him?
Yes. While I was sitting on the porch, you know, saying, who are you? You know, I just had to know who he was.
Right.
This figure sort of materialized at the top of the steps. It wasn't like his feet were not on the porch. I don't know how to explain it.
Floating?
It's kind of hard to explain.
When you say materialized, fully materialized, as in a solid human being, or sort of?
No.
No. I've got it.
But very clear, though.
Yes.
And he told me that his name was Michael.
Oh.
And I said, well, you know, what happened? And, you know, who were you with?
Yeah.
Where were you? Because I don't think the state park's right. And he gave me two other names. And the next day, he didn't leave. The next day, he was back and told me to look on a map and showed me the next sort of subdivision down west on the beach.
Well, what had happened to Michael?
He had been down on the beach with two friends. They had been partying some. He didn't go into a lot of detail. I felt like it was a very suspicious thing.
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, here you are talking to a dead person, not fully materialized in front of you. I mean, weren't you totally freaked?
Yes, I was. And I was for a long time afterwards.
How long did he remain with you in totality?
Until I left.
Which was?
He died on a Wednesday night.
Yes.
At midnight. I found him actually at 1 a.m. on a Thursday. He had been in the water for a couple hours. I left that Friday, and he was not identified until that Friday when the local paper had a huge article on the front page with his physical description and all that kind of, you know,
and
clothing.
His name was indeed Michael.
His name was indeed Michael.
And why did Michael wish to speak to you? Just to get it right? Was that the idea, the impression you had?
Actually, the impression that I had was, this sounds a little crass, but he was really ticked off that he woke up dead.
Yeah.
He was not happy.
I can imagine.
I know.
Yes, indeed.
It sounds kind of bad to say that.
But he was aware he was dead.
I don't think he was at first. I think that's
really
what the no-not yet was about.
Gotcha.
I think when he said that was the minute he realized that he was dead. He was also, I think, trying to communicate with people that he knew. He had lived down there for half of his life.
Did he essentially say goodbye to you? Did you know, was he aware of when you left? Were you aware of? Yes?
Yes.
And what did he say at the end?
I went and I stood at the top of the boardwalk that goes down to the beach.
Yes.
And I could feel his arms around my shoulders like he was giving me a hug. And he actually apologized for having put me through all that. But I think, really, I was the only person that could hear him. And that's why he kept coming back to me.
Of course. So many questions. I mean, if you get to talk to somebody who's dead, did you ask any of the questions a person might ask, like, now?
They don't answer everything. You know, he never told me his last name.
Yeah. Well, you had a full-fledged discussion with a ghost.
Yes.
That's one hell of a story, Virginia.
Yes, it is.
All right, my dear. Thank you.
Thank you,
and good night. I've heard this many times, that when we die, we don't necessarily understand right away that we're dead, and somehow we manage to reach out and interface with whoever is there. Maybe whoever finds our body, like that case, to find a body just sitting there, sort of swirling around in the near the sand and the surf. Wildcard line, good evening, or morning, or whatever, you're on the air.
Hi, Art, is this me?
It is indeed you. What is your first name?
My first name is Eric.
Okay, Eric, what's up?
Well, I guess this story begins back in the early 1990s, when I purchased a fairly old house in downtown Atlanta, about 60 years old or so, and it was really odd because I noticed soon after we moved in that my dog, a Jack Russell Terrier,
mm-hmm.
would refuse to sleep in the bedroom. And this was very uncharacteristic. She was one of those dogs that likes to hog the bed and, you know, it's just always in there.
Yes, like the cats I have, yeah.
And she just hated to go in there. She would go in for about a second and just head right back out again. And the one exception to that is every now and then, over the years, she would catch a mouse, and she would take it into the bedroom,
uh-huh.
and she would kill it there, and she would shake it so vigorously that blood, it's kind of gross, but it would splatter against this one particular wall. It was always in the same place.
Oh, great.
So I'd come
mouse
home.
Blood.
Yeah, and I'd come home, and of course I wouldn't be too happy about that.
No.
Anyways, after I'd been in that house for a few years, I started experimenting with OBEs. I'd been listening to your show by then for a while. And
out-of-body experiences, yeah.
Yes, Albert Taylor.
Yes, he laid out the groundwork for how to do an OBE.
Yes, and actually I got his books and a few others. I think Bill Buhlman's books.
Yes.
And I really applied myself for a few months. And I actually did have my first OBE. It took about 3 or 4 months to do, but I was determined I wanted to see what it was like.
It's quite shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, it was really amazing. It was a state of awareness that I'd never been in before. It definitely was not a dream.
Did you meet something or somebody?
Well, at first I was just kind of floating above my body, and it was really weird because I could see in like every direction at once. I don't really know how to explain that. But soon right after that, I saw some kind of shape against the wall where the mouse blood got splattered every now and then.
Oh.
And I saw it was a small dog, probably like a black poodle. It was about the closest I could make out what it was.
Yes.
And it was like lapping at the ground like there was a pool of liquid there or something like that. It was just kind of licking, licking, licking.
Yeah.
And I was jarred by this because I thought, oh, there's some weird black dog in my room, you know. And, you know, I got in the house somehow. So immediately I shot back up into my body, and I turned on the light, and there was no dog there. And there was no liquid on the ground either.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I didn't really know what to make of that. But when I sold that house a few years later, my neighbor, she's about an 80-year-old woman. She's very nice. She lived there next door to my house for about 50 years.
Yes.
And she said she'd been dying to tell me the history of my house, but she didn't want to tell me when I lived there. She didn't want to scare me.
And the history was?
Well, back in the 1950s or so, a young newlywed couple had purchased my house, and shortly thereafter, the husband was killed in a car accident just a few blocks from the house.
All right, I'll tell you what, that's a good punchline point. Hold it right there, all right?
Okay, sure.
We'll get back to you right after the break. You're listening to the annual Ghost to Ghost program. I'm Art Bell from the high desert. It's cold and the winds are blowing out there.
I've had nothing but bad luck since the day I saw the cat at my door. So I came into you, sweet lady, answering your mystical call. Crystal ball on the table, showing the future, the past. Same cat with them evil eyes, and I knew it was a spell she cast.
That old cowpoke went riding out one dark and windy day. Upon a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, a-plowing through the ragged skies, and up a cloudy draw. Were still on fire, and their hooves were made of steel. Their horns were black and shiny, and their hot breath he could feel. A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky, for he saw the riders coming hard, and he heard their mournful cry.
Take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
By the way, this is the original, the very original of this. Welcome to the Halloween 2003 Ghost to Ghost program. In a moment, we continue. Incidentally, you might want to check out the webcam photograph this evening. It's pretty neat. There's no way my wife, Ramona, though, can look devilish. She's just beautiful, even when she actually sits there and puts on a face and tries to look devilish. She's actually, she's just beautiful, no matter what. So you might take a look, though. And now back to our friend with his dog. Yes, sir. Continue,
yes.
Please. Yes.
So let's see. I think I was just saying that my next-door neighbor, the old lady, had been telling me that A newlywed couple back in the 1950s, they purchased my house, and shortly after that, the husband was killed in a car accident just a couple blocks from the home. And a neighbor apparently found out about that right away, and she rushed to get the wife just a few minutes after it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And she arrived on the scene, and she found her husband's body. It was decapitated, and
sure
it was a very grisly experience.
I'm sure.
Yeah, and so she was, of course, you know, distraught and hysterical, and she went back to the house and went into the bedroom, and she shot herself in the head with a gun.
God.
And my next door neighbor said that she heard the shot, and she looked, and she could see through the bedroom window that far wall. I mean, she just saw
blood
splattered on it.
Blood there.
Yeah, and it was the same wall that, you know, my dog enjoyed.
Yes.
Splattering the mouse blood on, which I thought was something. And, you know, I was curious at that point. I said, did they happen to own any pets? And she said, yeah, they owned a small dog, a small black dog. And, of course, that kind of sent chills down my spine.
I'm sure that'd be the last time I OB'd.
Yeah, it was a while after that, and I never did in that bedroom again.
I fully understand. Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome.
Take care. All right. Well, you see, what is it that animals know that we don't? Obviously something, huh? They have a connection, perhaps, to a bridge world that we can only very occasionally pierce. They see things that, well, we don't. Cats certainly do. Any of you animal owners and lovers out there know exactly what I mean. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, sir. Hi.
Hi. How you doing, Art?
I'm fine. What is your first name?
My name is Rob.
Okay, Rob.
Well, my story that I have for you tonight concerns some incidents that occurred to me when I was stationed at the Portsmouth Naval Hospital in Portsmouth, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And the hospital has an interesting history. It was built in 1830, was the very first naval hospital ever built.
Mm-hmm.
And the building that I was in was the original hospital building. They called it Building 1. And when we first got to the command there, they told us a few stories. And one of them they told us was about a specter that they called the Lady in Red. Excuse me. And this had to be a nurse that was supposedly worked on the surgical unit there during the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And she had apparently hung herself on the fifth floor of the building there, which was the old surgical unit.
Mm-hmm.
How she got the term Lady in Red, we never quite understood. But they told us when we first got there that there were strange things that would happen periodically, not to be alarmed. So,
in other words, they just got used to a presence.
Yes, yeah. More or less.
Yeah.
So the first thing that I had that happened to me, the first unit that I was assigned to, and I did work in the psychiatric unit, which was stationed on the third floor.
Strange enough anyway, yes.
Yes,
I was a medic in the Air Force, thank you.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, then you know a little bit about it. So at any rate, this first unit that I was on was an open bay unit. So it just had the rows of beds on each side
mm-hmm.
of the ward.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have any privacy or anything.
Yeah, straight ward. I understand.
Right. So most of the shifts that I worked there were the graveyard shifts from the 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. So I spent a lot of time in there in the middle of the night. And this first incident, we had just a handful of patients on the unit that evening. It was somewhere around late November.
Uh-huh.
And it was rather cold. So we had all the lights out except for a light at the very front desk where I was sitting and just reviewing some charts. There was another corpsman with me, but he was off to the side. We had a little wing that ran adjacent to it, and he was by himself.
Mm-hmm.
So I was out on the unit minding the store, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this young man. He was about 18, 19 years old, and he had gotten up. It was about 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And he approached the desk and went past me to the restroom. But he looked a little shaky when he went past me.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came back out, he asked me if I knew who was wandering around in the back of the unit. And I told him that there wasn't anybody back there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he proceeded to tell me that he had seen this woman and that she was dressed in antique clothing and that she appeared to be floating in the back, and she was circling around a pool table that they had in the very back for recreation.
Bearing in mind, you're in a psychiatric unit here, right?
Yeah.
So,
and so you know, you're taking a little bit of it with a grain of salt.
Yes.
So, you know, I didn't at first really think anything of it. I thought perhaps he had been dreaming, had just woke up.
And so what happened?
Well, he was very insistent that something very strange was going on. So I got the other corpsman, and together we went back to the back of the unit with a pair of flashlights. And we did have one little dim light that was on outside of the medicine room.
Right.
And we didn't see a thing. But this young man was so insistent that he had seen this woman, described her, the period dress that she wore.
Yes.
And he was so frightened that he refused to go back to his bunk. He insisted on sleeping closer to the desk.
Well, I can't say that I blame him at all, but
no,
why would you give it particular credence since it was a psychiatric ward after
well,
all?
This particular ward, it was for what we called adjustment disorders, which was nothing terribly serious. It's just usually young kids that when they got out of boot camp, they get thrown into their first command. And
well, okay, so you never saw this entity yourself.
I never actually saw it, but it was, and the next morning, when we mentioned it in the morning report to the AM crew coming on,
right?
The head nurse, he was a lieutenant commander, had been in the Navy for over 20 years.
Yes.
And he looked at me, and he said, "Did you make a note of it?" And I said, "You know, yes, sir." And he said, "Well, that's good." He said, "Because this kind of stuff happens fairly regular." And he said, "Don't be alarmed." And he said it so matter-of-factly, as if to say, "Yeah, we know what this is."
I gotcha. All right. Well, thank you very, very much. Well, on the one hand, you dismiss it because it's a psychiatric patient, but then on the other, there's history. I wonder if the sane at death are as likely to incarnate on the other side in some way, if that really is the other side, as the sane. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Happy Halloween, Art. This is Jerry from Bismarck, North Dakota on KFYR 550 on the AM channel.
That's the way to do it, buddy. All right.
I have a good one for you.
Fire away.
I was attending college and living with friends in a haunted house in Fargo, North Dakota in the early 1970s.
How'd you know it was haunted?
Well, let me go on here and I'll tell you.
All right.
We all experienced the mischievousness of one or more poltergeists residing with us in the house. Every day, without exception, lights would turn on unexpectedly. The entrance door would open and close, although upon checking for visitors, there would be no one there. In our kitchen was a pantry that had a curtain opening the door. Once in a while sitting in the kitchen table, the curtain would fly straight out as if someone or something would be pulling it straight out.
That would do it for me.
One time, the hall curtain burst into flames. Fortunately, someone was there to douse the flames.
Whew.
I had the bedroom in the attic of this old house, and many nights I would hear someone walking up the stairs. When I turned on the light to explore the situation, there would be no one there. During lightning storms, my possessions such as shoes and books would be thrown across the room and sometimes directly at me while I was laying in bed.
You actually saw these things going through the air and coming directly at you?
I did.
Uh-huh.
I felt them.
Yeah.
My dog, a golden lab, was always growling or whining at something in my bedroom. I saved the best for last. One night, we all retired to our respective bedrooms for a good night's sleep. I must have been unusually tired because I fell asleep immediately and don't recall waking up all night. In the morning, I woke up fairly refreshed and felt something cold beside me in my bed. I reached for it and found a butcher knife laying beside me in my bed. I wondered how in the hell a butcher knife ended up in bed with me.
Uh-huh.
I first thought it was a prank by one of my other roommates, but I realized that couldn't possibly be because I always lock my bedroom door when I retire at night. I proceeded to get dressed for the day and grab my butcher knife to return it to the kitchen drawer where it belongs. As I was passing one of my roommates' bedrooms, he and his girlfriend were just exiting the bedroom, and he turned white as a sheet when he saw me with the butcher knife in my hand. I asked him what was wrong, and he began to tell me about the harrowing experience earlier that night. He said he was awakened by a person he said looked like me, standing over his bed with a butcher knife in both hands above my head, about to stab him.
My God.
He said he could not yell out and was able to move his hands back and forth, and the person dissipated into the thin air. His girlfriend had slept through the whole ordeal. One other thing, because his girlfriend was spending the night, he said the bedroom door was locked to protect their intimacy.
Have you ever had thoughts of murder?
No, I haven't. He still is a good friend of mine, and I never had any negative thoughts about him at all throughout my whole life.
But he saw you with that butcher knife in both hands, and
he
said found the butcher knife in your bed.
And the butcher knife ended up in my bed.
All right, my friend. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Art.
And good night. Well, you know, that sounds like something you'd tell a defense attorney, right? He dreamed it. And I was I standing about, no, with a butcher knife? No. How did it get in my bed? Well, I don't know. I don't know how it got there. Only in those cases, there's usually a bloody mess in the other room. Not the person just waking up telling you about a dream. on our international line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Well, hi there. What's your first name?
My name's Robert. I'm in Albany, New York, listening on News Talk Radio 810 WGY.
Welcome to the program.
I don't know why I'm on the international line, other than the fact that I'm 5 miles from Albany International Airport.
Well, that's because I called you, and I got to choose the line. So what's up?
Well, I had emailed you the story, and that's why you called me. And
that's right.
And if there's time, I'd like to give a little history leading up to the story, which increases the impact of it.
We'll do the best we can.
Okay. In 1974, I began having premonitions of my father's impending death. I did not believe in psychic phenomena at the time, and my father, so far as I could tell, seemed to be in perfect health. And I kept dismissing these things as some sort of odd psychological thing that would just pass. And one night I was asleep, and I suddenly woke in a cold sweat. The family cat, which had still lived in our family home in upstate New York, I was living in Manhattan at the time, I heard that family cat scream, and an image came into my mind of the cat being run over. I took that to be a very odd
thing. Sure,
went back to sleep. And about a week and a half later, I'm visiting my parents at the home in upstate New York. And it turns out the cat hadn't been seen since that very night. And at that point, the reality of that experience hit me. And I began to wonder if these premonitions I was having about my father were true.
And those were?
Those were that my father was going to die, despite the fact that he seemed to be in perfect health.
Yeah.
Now, I had always had a phobia about learning to drive. And one of the reasons I was living in Manhattan rather than commuting was that I'd never learned to drive. The reason I never learned to drive is any time I sat in the front seat of a car, I kept getting this visual in my head of going through the windshield. Even when I would go to a store or be window shopping, I wouldn't get too close to the plate glass.
Right.
Because I would have this visual in my head of going through the glass.
You apparently were learning to trust your intuition.
As a result of the experience with the cat, I was beginning to wonder,
right.
And I figured better safe than sorry.
Right.
So I began to take driver's lessons. My hand-eye coordination was never the best, so it took several months before I finally passed the test. I bought a new car, got rid of my apartment in the city, moved back to the family home so that I would be there. My mother was disabled. The house was in the middle of nowhere. There was no way to get there except by car. And if anything was going to happen to my father, it would fall upon me to take care of my mother.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm there 1 week, 2 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks. My father seems to be in perfect health, and I'm beginning to think I've made a first-class fool of myself.
Gotcha.
And I'm beginning to look in the New York Times, trying to find another apartment in the city and, you know, move back and figure out how I'm going to get rid of my car. Well, one night I was, I was working in New York City at the time. I would drive 35 miles to the bus stop, take the bus in. I would work, and that night I had a date with my girlfriend, who later became my wife, and she did something she never did before, and we had our relationship was 4 years duration at that point. She stood me up, and I'm waiting in the lobby of her apartment house, very swanky apartment house, and I'm waiting 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. Finally, it gets to the point where if I don't leave, I'm going to be stranded because I've got to catch the last bus.
Uh-huh.
So I catch the last bus. I drive home. I get home very late. I go into my room. I can't sleep. Suddenly, there's a knock at the door. And it's my mother saying, your father's breathing funny. So I go and I rush in, and there's my father, eyes wide open, not breathing at all. And I try to do CPR. Nothing's happening. And my father died in my arms. I was 23 years old at the time, and you can imagine how traumatic that was.
I can, yes.
But had I not had this warning and not made these preparations, it would have been a far greater disaster. Now, let's flash forward 2 years. It's 1977. At that time, I had come up in the world in terms of my career. I was running the night shift of a major ed typography studio in New York City. This was back before the days of the Macintosh and desktop publishing revolution, where it actually took skill to produce typography.
Okay, we got about a minute or so.
Okay, I'll rush through the rest of this then. I'm driving on Upper Manhattan, going downtown, early on a Saturday morning. I'd worked about a 16-hour shift.
Right.
I had a Pinto. I glanced in the rearview mirror, and there I see my father.
Your father.
Who died 2 years before, with a look of urgency on his face, leaning forward with his hands on the back of my bucket seat. Suddenly there's a bang. The car careens out of control, and just like you see in the movies, time seems to slow down.
Oh, sure.
As the car flies. Now, if any of you know Manhattan, down the center island at 74th Street, there's this big concrete pillar like they have in Paris where they post community notices.
I know the ones.
Okay, my car smashed into that pillar. Front of the car was smashed in. Passenger side was bent at a 45-degree angle.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't know at the time Pintos were supposed to explode in flame when hit from the rear.
That's right.
Which it didn't. At the point of impact, my bucket seat flew back, and I was lying down. When the dust settled and I managed to extricate myself from what was left of my car, I saw the damage. I walked around and assessed the damage. The clip on the back of the bucket seat had broken, so I was lying down. The car was totaled, so I opened the glove box to take out the various documents in there.
Just about out of time, yes.
Well, a dollar bill that my father had given me when he was alive for luck to keep in the glove box was gone.
Take care, my friend, and thank you. And have a good life. From the high desert, this is Ghost to Ghost AM.
West of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Actually, this is Ghost to Ghost AM. Your calls only all night long. In a moment, we'll get right back to it. This is Halloween. Go ahead, turn the lights down, and let's go. On my guest line, you're on the air, Ghost to Ghost AM. Hi. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
What is your first name?
Cindy.
Cindy.
And I live in Dallas, Texas.
Dallas.
Thing on Cliff.
Okay.
Well, I had emailed my story into you, and it's not that it's so scary, but I think it's a message from beyond, definitely.
That'll do.
Okay. Well, about 12 years ago, my father passed away unexpectedly. He had a heart attack, and so he wasn't able to say goodbye to my sister and myself.
Mm-hmm.
But what was interesting is that for 35 years, he had worked for Oscar Mayer Company. Mm-hmm. And most of us know that that's the manufacturing plant where they make the different lunch meats, hot dogs, etc.
I think hot dogs when you say hot
dogs. Exactly, yeah. Hot dogs. So when we were little children in the 60s, my dad would always bring home, and anyone who grew up in the Midwest would probably remember this, these little red weenie whistles.
Of course.
Are you familiar with those?
Yes, of course. I remember.
And they had
them.
The little holes, and you would blow, and you played a little musical song.
Right.
And on, like, hot dog packages, they have the little weenie mobile on, if you ever looked at the front of Oscar Mayer hot dog package. Well, anyway, so that was our family's joke growing up as kids. We always had these red weenie whistles in the 60s and 70s all over the house, and we'd play the little song, and that was just our little family thing. So fast forward to when my father passes away. And I called my sister, and I told my sister that my father had died. She lived in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
So she was driving up to Iowa to go to the funeral. And when she got to the funeral, I was already there, and she just kind of looked upset and kind of bewildered. And I talked to her, and I said, well, what's wrong besides we're coming to the funeral? And she said, Cindy, the weirdest thing has happened. She goes, on my way driving from St. Louis to Iowa, as I was driving down the highway, this huge weenie mobile was driving toward me, the promotional car.
Yes.
And she said, if that isn't a message from Dad, you know, I don't know what is, because we didn't get to say goodbye to him. And so I said, well, that is really strange, because most people in their lifetime will never see this car that drives around with the big hot dog on top. And so that kind of tweaked her out, but she felt it was a message. Well, I'm a school teacher. And after the funeral, I came back to Dallas, and my first day back at school, I'm a high school art teacher. One of my students was looking through a big box of old magazines for an idea for an art project.
Mm-hmm.
And just, this was my first day back from the funeral. Out of the blue, the student says to me, I don't know why, but I just found a picture in an old magazine of a weenie mobile.
I know. That might do it for me.
And he calls me over and he says, look at this.
Yes.
And it was just an old magazine that, you know, I keep in the classroom, probably from the 70s, 80s kind of thing, that the kids can cut up. And here was that same promotional car that my sister had driven by on the way to the funeral.
That's a little much.
It gets even weirder, because then this student looked at me and he said, you know, I don't know why, but I'm just compelled. I'm going to draw this for my art project. And he goes, his exact words were, I can't even explain to you why I'm going to do this, but I'm going to draw this for you.
Yes.
And it gets weirder. The student's name was Chris, and my father's name was Chris.
Uh-huh.
Now,
well,
it gets a little more strange. I'm almost finished.
Okay.
I decide I'm going to show my mother this picture that this kid has drawn of this weenie mobile.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have it in my hands, and I come home, and my mother watched my daughter, who is about 7 at the time. And so my little girl comes running up to me as I have this picture of a weenie mobile in my hand. And she was like, Mommy, Mommy, look what Grandma found and Grandma gave me today. And I said, what's that? And she opened her hand, and she had the little red weenie whistle in her hand. And in my hand, I'm holding a drawing from a student of this wiener mobile.
Yes.
And so the two of us just kind of looked at each other, and I was like, you know, I don't think a message from beyond can be any louder.
Any clearer, yes.
Than that.
Well, that's wonderful. And that's right. I think that our loved ones, when they get to the other side, depending on what they're able to do, they get messages back, and that was one of those.
And just a quick and brief note how weird this is. Last night I was watching TV, and I was wondering if maybe my story would get on your show. Last night I was watching television, and there was a little clip for a show coming up, and on this clip it's about the red weenie mobile. And when I saw it last night, I just knew. I said, I'll be on your show tonight telling the story.
And so you have been. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Right, take care. Well, there you have it. Well, you know, yes, what would be, I mean, think about it for a second. Aside from the fact that you would realize you are dead, and that would be some very serious realization, I suppose, for you, what would you first want to do? And the answer is you'd want to get hold of your relatives, or at the very least send them some kind of message. And, of course, that's exactly what that was. Now, a slightly circuitous route, to be sure, but nevertheless, a message. And that's what you may be wanting to do when you get to the other side. You may want to send a message back, and it may not be easy. Manifestation may be very difficult. And the kind of message that this lady got, perhaps that's something you can do. You're on the air, Ghost to Ghost AM, on the first-time caller line. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. What is your first name?
My name's Colleen.
Colleen, what's up?
Well, I live on the eastern shore of Maryland, on Chesapeake Bay.
Okay.
And I'm a director of nursing for an assisted living facility.
Oh, yes.
And where I work is a very old building. It's over 100 years old. We celebrated our 100-year anniversary this past June. And the original structure of the building was a gift from a former governor of Maine to his daughter,
mm-hmm.
who was a young bride at the time. And the home has two large wings on either side of it, and this is where the residents live in this assisted living building.
Mm-hmm.
Right after I started working there, the residents, several of them, would come to me and complain of a young boy that kept pestering them, bothering them, telling them to go places they weren't supposed to go, pushing, you know, going in the elevator and the buttons would go up and down, and he would climb up on top of their dressers and taunt them, and he was just a bothersome.
A young boy out of nowhere? I mean, this is a place where older people are, assisted living, right? So
right.
There
well,
shouldn't
at first
be
I
any
thought
children.
It was a family visiting. And this little boy was part of the family.
Oh,
so as I would go up to investigate this little boy who was bugging them so much, I would say, well, please tell me where he is, and I'll go talk to the family and see if they can keep him in better control.
Sure.
Well, they would point, of course, and there was no little boy there. And I'd be like, well, where is he? And they would say, over there, can't you see him? He's in the elevator, or he's on top of my dresser. Please take him away.
And all of these older people would be seeing him, and you wouldn't?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. So I started to get the hair rising on the back of my neck, thinking, okay, am I the one, you know, seeing weird or feeling weird here? Is it just, you know, is it somebody else? But I would talk to employees who've worked there for over 20 years and say, you know, the weirdest thing happened to me today, and I would tell my story, and they would be like, ah, so you're going to get to see the little boy, too. And I said, well, what do you mean? And they said, well, this little boy has been showing himself, you know, at least as long as we've been here and probably longer.
Huh.
And, what we think he is, or who we think he is the young son of the bride who the home was given to, because apparently she had several boys, and the youngest one had died at an early age.
Oh.
We don't know what from, but it's a little weird when you're walking down the hall and you see the elevator door pop open and no one's there.
Yeah, well, you see, it does seem as though we tend to stay in the surroundings of the place where we died. So actually, that does make sense. Did you ever see this young boy yourself?
I've never seen him, no. I would love to.
You really want to?
Well, yeah, sure I do. And, you know, there's many ghosts there, and there's many stories. And some, I have a resident who won't even sleep in her bed. She's been there for over 2 years, and she refuses to sleep in the bed because she swears the bed moves when she's in it. And to prove to her, you know, that there was nothing wrong with the bed, I laid down in it, and I was like, okay, well, this is a normal bed. It doesn't move, but, you know, it's the Alzheimer's patients mostly. And I often think, you know, do they have some connection that we don't?
Boy, there's
they start losing?
A really good question. Thank you very, very much. That's a really good question. Do you suppose in life, that when we begin losing some of our faculties, as would have been the case in the story she just told, and with the people she deals with, that our brain in some way makes up for the loss of those faculties by giving us some additional ability, as in, I see a dead person, maybe not dead people, but a dead person, one who's been in residence here since he died here. Wildcard line, you're on the air, Ghost to Ghost AM. Hi.
Hi, Art.
How are you?
I'm fine. This is Pat in Houston.
Pat in Houston. Hi, Pat.
Are you having a happy Halloween?
It's a ghostly
Halloween.
That's right. I prefer exactly what we're doing right now, Pat. What's up?
Well, this is a story that happened to me several years ago. We had some very good friends, and our husbands decided to go hunting one weekend. My friends had just been able to buy a brand new house in a very plush, exclusive part of Houston.
Uh-huh.
And it was a very expensive house, and we were very young, and so I wanted to go spend the night and see how her house was.
Sure.
Okay, so it was raining that weekend, like it can rain in Houston in the coastal areas. You know, it just rains and rains, and Our husbands went on and went hunting, but my friend had told me that I may not want to stay with her that night because weird things had been happening in her house. And I told her, oh, you know, nothing scares me. Mm. I was young then.
Mm-hmm.
And I welcomed the time to go spend with her and her daughter. So we ate supper, and it got dark, and we went to bed. Well, their house was a long contemporary branch-style house with one big bedroom on one end and the living room in the middle and the kitchen on the other end with an attached garage. Well, we talked for a while, and then we went to sleep, and I woke up all of a sudden. Both of our daughters were just screaming loudly.
Oh.
They were in a little nursery that was kind of attached on the side of the bedroom we were in.
Yes.
So I jumped up to go see what was wrong with them, but as I was getting out of the bed, I felt a cold feeling just start from one side of me on my right side. And it must have taken maybe 10 seconds to go pass all the way through my body. It was the coldest that I've ever been in my life. It's just really hard to describe.
And you could actually feel it moving across your body.
It was like you were just, I don't know how to even explain it. You were just frozen. You just couldn't do anything except experience that really terrific coldness.
You're doing fine.
Yes. And so it left, and I got up to see what the girls were doing, and they were quiet by then. But as I was checking them, there was a terrible pounding on the living room front door. And so I started to go to the front door, and my friend started just sobbing, just saying, please don't go to the front door. Don't go. Don't go. It won't do any good. And I was like, well, I'm going to go see who's at the door. Well, then the pounding kind of moved around to the garage door.
You're like every lady who dies in any horror flick I've ever seen. Yeah, sure, let's go to the basement. Well, let's go open the door.
Let's go see who's out there with a
butcher
knife, right?
That's right. So you go to the door, huh?
Right. So I headed for the kitchen to go to the garage door because that's where the pounding was. Well, then the pounding stopped there, and I looked over to my right, and there were big patio doors looking out at their big backyard. And there was huge, just pounding, just frantic pounding, like the glass would almost break.
Yeah.
But when I looked, there was nobody there. So by this time, I was really kind of afraid, and my friend was going,
well, it's about time.
Just come back, you know. Yeah. Don't go. But I did. I called the police. I called 911 and got the police. And it was a very exclusive part of Houston, so they were there as fast as you could put the phone down almost. And I let them in to the house because they wanted to check it out. And my friend was going, oh, please, please, no one is here. Just won't do any good. She was hysterical by then.
Yeah.
So the police checked the doors, and they decided to walk around the perimeter of the house. Well, it had been raining so much. There were no footprints outside at all.
Right.
But they could hear the pounding on the garage door to the kitchen. So they came into the garage, to the kitchen, and tried to open the garage door.
Yes.
They could not even wedge that door open. My friends had not unpacked all their boxes, and the garage was just stuffed to the rafters with packing boxes.
Uh-huh.
And so bad that the police could not even wedge the door open.
Right.
So they said, well, we'll go check around at the patio door. So they went to look there, and there was nobody there at all. But when the policeman saw my friend, they remembered that they had been there once before, but they had never been able to find anybody at the house.
Uh-huh.
So my friend said, okay, you can leave. You know, it'll be okay now. We never hear this more than once a night. So I said, what do you mean? You never hear this more than once a night? Well, it seems that the original owner that had the house,
yes,
had hung herself in the kitchen.
This is like the third or the fourth suicide. It seems like suicides, for some reason, are more likely to remain than others. That should be telling. That's a strong message, I think. So she had hung herself.
She hung herself in the kitchen. And her husband had been, he traveled a lot, or he went hunting like our husbands did. He was not home an awful lot.
Yes.
But when he got home that night, he tried to get into the house, and it was all bolted on the inside. and he went around to the patio doors and looked into the kitchen, and he could see that she was hung, that she was dead, hanging. So he shot himself in the backyard that night.
Oh, my God.
And that's what we think the pounding on the door was his ghost trying to get in to help her.
All right. I really appreciate your story. Thank you. And there's so many aspects of that that I think are right on the money. The fact that there already tonight, how many have we heard that were suicides? So that must mean there's a greater chance. It must mean there's a greater chance for suicides to remain or be forced to remain. We don't know the nature of the other side, or even that that represents the other side. It may be a kind of a hellish place where people who do that kind of thing, commit suicide, remain. I don't know. And the other, of course, is that things continue to repeat. It may well be that the hell you enter when you do something like that is that you are then forced to repeat for eternity, I'll put a question mark there, that act that got you there, night after night after night. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. What is your...
Tom.
Tom, okay. Where are you, Tom?
I'm from Chicago.
Okay.
This happened approximately about 11 years ago.
Yes, Tom.
It's around 3 in the morning. I was coming home from a party with a friend. We're driving down Roberts Road, and I know you're thinking Resurrection Mary, but this has nothing to do with Resurrection Mary.
Okay.
There's somebody standing by the curb with a lantern, and he got in front of the car, and we slowed down. He walked towards the car. We looked. He had one. It was February. He had like a one of his arms was out, like a bandage was hanging, and it was like stained. It looked like maybe blood, whatever. It was like really gruesome looking. His mouth was agape. His eyes were like rolled in back of his head. His leg was missing, and you could see like a translucency through him. We just looked at each other and just like, whoa. We drove on. He walked in back of the car, and the other car, we looked in back, and the other car just went right through him.
Went right through him.
Went right through him.
And you and, I'm sorry, who was with you? Who saw
it? A friend. We were in a car.
And you both saw it?
We both saw it, and he was right by the side of us. We drove, and then he continued to walk across the street, and there was another cemetery. It was Bethany. Uh-huh. He was walking to the other cemetery. And there was another car in back that drove right through this apparition. I mean, that blew me away. I was like, for like a year, I'm telling you.
So there's no doubt in your mind then about ghosts, right?
Oh no, I have so many paranormal experiences. But that was probably the most spooked out one I've ever had.
Of course. I mean, when you see that with your own eyes.
I had a witness, too.
And then another set of eyes sees it.
And then we called Justice Police, and they didn't want to, you know, get into it. And then I called Richard Crow.
Well, can you blame them?
Of course.
They want bodies.
Of course.
Yeah, they want bodies. All right, thank you.
Thank you. You look like an angel.
Walk like an angel. Yeah, a lot of angelic ones that seem angelic when you meet them, well, they turn out to not be quite angels. We'll be right back. This is Ghost to Ghost 2003.
You fooled me with your kisses. You cheated and you schemed. Hell knows how you lied to me.
Wanna take a ride? Well, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Coast to Coast AM, actually. I am Art Bell, and we may expand this program to 5 hours tonight. I'm beginning to like your stories a lot. You're doing very well. So that's all we're doing tonight, by the way. We're telling ghost stories. They're your stories. No official guest, just all of you. And in just a very short moment, we'll get back to it. Mike in San Diego, Fast Blast Art. Time supposedly does not exist in the spirit world. So what the heck does the word eternity mean to a ghost? So if a person goes to hell for eternity, then what would that mean to a spirit that has gone to hell for committing suicide? I don't know, Mike. I just know what I'm hearing, and as you listen to these stories, an awful lot of them involve suicides, and time, well, it may mean nothing, but how could you have a punishment for eternity without realization and understanding that you're in this for eternity? Hmm? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello, what is your first name?
I'm Elizabeth, and I'm calling from Phoenix, Arizona.
All right, Elizabeth.
And, before I forget to tell you, if you're ever in Phoenix, there's a haunted restaurant you may be interested in. They have good food and about 20 ghosts.
Good food and 20 ghosts?
At least.
All right.
But anyway, I've also had numerous ghost encounters ever since I was about 6 years old. I go on record now, I don't like them. But the one I'm going to tell you about involves my late brother.
All right.
And before he died, he lived in northern Arizona, and I'm down here in Phoenix, of course, and he had been going through some marital problems. And my mama lived with me at the time, too, me and my baby. And he had asked, could he move back in with us while he got a divorce? And, of course, I said, yes, of course, you can.
Mm-hmm.
But I told him, I want to be with you when you pack your things. You know, something just told me I needed to be there.
Yes.
And he had promised, at the time he was driving for a trucking firm, and he had promised he would come get me, and, I just wanted to be there. I wanted to watch his back, basically.
Okay. All right.
Well, on August 5, 1995, I had worked night shift, and, so I didn't get to bed till like about 5 o'clock that morning. And at about 11:20,
You've got your radio on, don't you?
It's in the other room.
Yes, you shouldn't have a radio on. It's very confusing. But go ahead. You woke up.
Yeah, well, I just woke up. I had a most god-awful, horrible, sick feeling in the pit of my stomach, and I had such a blinding pain. I mean, a very hot, burning pain in the back of my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had migraines before, and this was not like any migraine, and it lasted for several minutes. And I just knew that something was wrong, that something awful was happening, but I didn't know what. And then about 3 hours later, I got the news that my brother had been shot.
So that was it. You knew,
well,
in other words, you knew?
I just knew something
had happened.
I knew something awful was happening. Well, I went up to the hospital where he was at, and like I said, it was a 4-hour drive, and that'll make sense to you in a minute. And he had left a living will, and I was with him when they disconnected the life support. They couldn't get me out of the room.
He was brain dead.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
But I couldn't be there, to watch his body die. I just couldn't face that.
I understand.
And then finally on August 8, I got the news that he had died. And it was like I got the news at 7:15. They said he had died at 7:05.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, my mom and I were just totally devastated. You know, and I managed to get her to bed in her room, and then I went to bed in my room, and I was just in my room, and I was just, you know, crying my heart out.
Yes.
And I thought my mom had gone to sleep also, so I wasn't even thinking anything. But then at 11:05, exactly 4 hours after he was pronounced dead, I heard the kitchen door open, and I heard it slam shut. And I heard my brother call out, "Mom, Beth, I'm home." And I remember looking up because, you know, my clock was right there by my bed. And I'm like, that's wishful thinking. That's just wishful thinking. And I literally cried until I cried myself to sleep. And the next morning, I went in to check on my mom. And she had been awake all night just crying and crying. You know, and I was just trying to comfort her. And then she said, "Beth, last night, I heard the kitchen door open, and I heard it slam. And I heard Lonnie call out, 'Mom, Beth, I'm home.'"
Huh.
And I said, "What time was that?" And she said, "I looked at my clock. It was 11:05.
Well, gee, what can I say? I guess he did come home one more time, huh?
Yeah, he did.
All right. Thank you very, very much. Maybe until you realize you are dead, you do something regular. I don't know. I mean, if you're able to in the next life, maybe you do that. Maybe you go home. Maybe you go to work. Maybe you keep headed toward, you know, if you were on the way to somewhere and had a car accident, maybe your body just keeps going toward its goal. You shake it off, and even though you're dead, you just keep going to do the next thing you were going to do until, of course, you realize. You're on the air, Ghost to Ghost AM. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hello there.
How are you?
I'm fine. What is your first name?
It's Steve.
Okay.
I'm calling from Vista, California.
All right, Steve.
And this is a pretty scary one.
Good. That's what I'm looking for. Go right ahead.
I have a friend. She's from Tijuana, Mexico. It happened, I think, about 5 or 6 years ago. This happened in her neighborhood. And, you know, I don't like telling this, but I almost have an obligation. There was a neighborhood party, you know, kids about 20 years old and up.
Sure.
And, you know, they do what typical Mexicans do there, you know, listen to music, eat, drink beer. And one of the people at the party brought out a Ouija board, and I'll refer to it as a Ouija, that's what they call it. And they started playing. There was probably, I think she said, 15 people there.
Yes.
And they're all from the same neighborhood. So they were playing it, and people were asking questions, you know, pretty neutral questions. And there was one guy who was pretty machismo. Maybe he had too many drinks. I don't know. He started calling this Ouija out. He was, you know, I won't use the word, but he was saying, "F you, Ouija."
Mm-hmm.
Ouija is a mentiroso, which is a liar.
Mm-hmm. And this is not wise.
No, it's not.
I'm not even Mexican, and I don't, but I know that. That's not smart.
Yes, it's not smart. And so this went on, and he kept doing this. Kept doing this, and he wanted to be confrontational with this thing.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, they said, "Okay, that's enough. Let's put this away." He goes, "No, I insist. You know, I want to play. Yo quiero jugar. I want to play."
Yes.
So he started playing, and he asked the neutral questions at first. And he would respond by saying, you know, "You're a liar," or, you know, "Cuss it out again."
Yes.
And he asked a question I don't think he should have asked. He asked the Ouija, "Do you know when I'm going to die?"
Uh-huh.
And it was matter of fact. It spelled out claro que sí, which is of course. And he called it a liar again.
Yeah.
And he said, "Okay, if you know, you liar," he called it.
Uh-huh.
"When?" And the Ouija spelled out "en esta noche," which is this night.
Really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Good answer.
Yeah.
You just don't do that. And so now what happened to our friend?
Well, his girlfriend was crying hysterically, like, "Stop this. I'm getting scared." And He's like, I'm not scared. This is nothing.
Uh-huh.
And so I think my friend told me, like, they all started going home maybe like at 1 in the morning.
Yeah.
And Tijuana is a kind of a hilly area. And I know
it well. I work there.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I saw where this happened, too. And I saw the house where this party occurred.
And so what happened to him?
He was walking across the street, and it was like a, it's hard to describe, but there's like a curve, and then it goes downhill.
You don't have to describe it. What happened to him?
He got hit by a truck and killed.
Yeah, it figures. You know, well, you don't do that. You really don't do that. Thank you very much. A Ouija board, whatever else, I won't say a lot about it because I, years ago, had an experience with a Ouija board that I really will not discuss. But I will tell you this much. It's absolutely a conduit to somewhere else. And I'm not so sure that it's the Ouija board itself, but it's you. I suppose it could be a slab of anything, but if you're inviting contact, if you're asking for contact, then you're very likely going to get it. At the very least, you're going to open a corridor to somebody or something somewhere and, you know, cussing it out and calling it out, in essence, wouldn't be such a good idea. And asking it when you're going to die, even less of a good idea. And, well, there you go. So I wonder if what you might call out on the other end has the power to, let's say, change what would have been your date otherwise. Because that was just too good an answer this night. So do we conclude from that that whatever was on the other side had the power to arrange the date and had about enough? You're on the air, Coast to Coast AM, with Ghost to Ghost AM, rather, with Art Bell. Hi. Hello?
Hello, Art?
Yes.
Hey.
Your name is?
Brad.
Hey, Brad.
And listening to you here in Phoenix on Mighty Streamlink.
Oh, yes.
And the story I have is, it's not so much a terrifying one, but a spooky one, nonetheless. My grandfather passed away when I was about 15, and he was an unusual guy. The best way to describe him would probably be as a little bit ornery. He was 77 when he died, and he was still...
You're in the right to be ornery.
Exactly.
By 77.
Yeah, and he was still, you know, telling funny jokes and pulling pranks and grabbing the dog's tail when it walked by. And
uh-huh.
He was an interesting guy. And he had a heart attack, and he was in a coma. And, of course, the whole family gathered, you know, went to upstate New York and gathered around him. And my sister was there, and she was she had recently gotten married, and she was the apple of his eye. They were just so very close.
Oh, yes.
And she had planned a trip to go overseas with her new husband, and they planned a trip to go to Israel. And, you know, things were up in the air. You know, obviously they don't know exactly what's going to happen and in that situation. The prognosis wasn't good. And my mom told my sister, you know, it would be best if you went. He would want you to, you know, keep your plans and go ahead and go.
Yes.
And reluctantly, she, you know, got on the plane with her husband, and they took the trip. And I believe the day that they arrived, they were sleeping off, you know, the jet lag and everything. I think it's like a 15-hour flight.
Sure.
And my brother-in-law had, he'd worked on Wall Street for a while, so needless to say, he was a commodities trader. He had a lot of money. And he bought a Concord watch before he left, and it was a brand new watch, and they're quite expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And he noticed that the watch had stopped. And you know, shortly thereafter, they're getting gathered or whatever, and my mom called, and you know, let them know that my grandfather had indeed passed away, and that and you know, they were starting to get the details and everything, and found out that he passed away at exactly the same time as my brother-in-law's watch had stopped.
Huh.
And the spookiest part of all is my grandfather was a watchmaker. For 40 years, he spent, you know, fixing watches.
His way of sending a message, huh?
Yeah, and, you know, it's not scary, but it's spooky, and it's a trick that he would pull.
Yeah. All right, son. I know about watches. Watch this.
Exactly. It was great, though.
I got you. All right, thank you. In the category of how to get a message across, a watchmaker. You got yourself a new watch, and you didn't stick around for me, huh? Watch this. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello. Hi. What is your first name, please?
Randy.
Maybe?
Randy.
Randy. Okay, Randy.
Yeah, Randy from Seattle. Hey, and yeah, 1995, I was a Marine Lance Corporal stationed in Kanui Marine Corps Air Station in Hawaii.
Yes.
On the island of Oahu.
Yes, tough duty. Huh.
Yeah, I was, well...
I was being facetious.
A lot of duty.
So Hawaii is a pretty good place to get stationed.
Yeah, it was pretty rough. But I do a lot of duty on the back gate.
Uh-huh.
We called it Bravo Gate. And that was from about 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. And it'd get spooky a lot. You know, you'd sit out there by yourself.
Yeah. Well, the islands are spooky anyway. You know, they're naturally that way.
Yeah, and the island that base was built on was supposedly a meeting place in the old days for Hawaiian chiefs, and there's a lot of burial mounds and that sort of thing out there. But
I know.
You'd sit out there late at night, and you'd kind of hear things, you know, and I'd hear what I thought were voices and things like that. And one night, I thought I was really spooked, and I heard maybe a voice or something say, hey, two or three times.
Uh-huh.
You know, kind of a few minutes apart. Just, you know, maybe it was my imagination or something, but so I called another MP friend of mine to come out, and, you know, they come out and bring you dinner.
Yes.
Sort of thing, and got to talking to him about it, and he didn't seem very surprised at all. And he said a couple years prior, he'd been part of he said he used to hear the same sort of thing himself. He'd actually heard his name called. His name was Jason, and he heard his name called a few times. And he'd been part of a work. Actually, an MP had killed himself on that back gate a couple years prior, and he'd been part of the working party that had been assigned to clean up the mess out of the restroom that was right across the street.
Oh.
And
so the death had been right there.
Yeah, and it was a really interesting story. He said that. Since the base was on a peninsula, there was two approaches from the front and back gate. He said at the time there was an MP on the front gate and the back gate, and their plan had been to kill their watch commander and then kill themselves. And the whole plan had kind of gone wrong, and the MP on the back gate ended up killing himself anyway.
Yeah, here we are again. These suicides, a really disproportionate number of the calls this morning have really involved suicides and then appearances or continuing appearances. And so there's another one, folks. There obviously is something very, very much wrong with committing suicide, with choosing to end your own life. That would seem to earn you a period of time, if not eternity, doing something. You beginning to see a pattern here? Not an absolute pattern, but nevertheless a pattern. The relatives, they either make an appearance, or dead bodies washing up on the shore make an appearance, or we get an appearance for one of many reasons. But one thread that seems obvious tonight, I mean absolutely obvious, is those who take their own lives appear to stay exactly where they are, probably doing exactly what they were doing at the time. And I don't know about you, but the prospect of doing that bad, evil thing for eternity, and you know, that eternity is a very, very long time indeed, right? It's forever. So, if you're listening tonight, then you're hearing that same pattern, and if anything would ever discourage anybody from taking their own life, that certainly would be it. And if you throw in a murder and something really evil in the process, then I think it's more likely than ever to happen. All right, well, you're listening to Ghost AM 2003 from the high desert in the middle of the night with the wind howling out there. I'm Art Bell.
the leaves blow across the long black road to the darkened sky in its rage. But the white bird just sits in her cage unknown.
Call Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
So in other words, people on the other side send messages. Some of them serve time on the other side. And I'm sure many, many other things. Ghost to Ghost continues in a moment. I guess maybe this is worth a thought. For those of you who have faith, then there is certainly no need to hear any stories of this sort. Not really. Because you know that when you die, you're with your God. And you have your religion. But then there are some of us, though we believe in God, and I do believe in God. I'll speak for myself. I believe in God. But I'm also really a pragmatist. I mean, I'm really a pragmatist, and I'm not positive. I'm not positive about the afterlife. I'm not positive about anything. So short of faith that would bridge that for me, I'm inquiring. I'm going to keep inquiring about what the others, what, whether there really is something on the other side, past our physical lives. It's a really important question. And as you listen to these stories, maybe, just maybe, you'll begin to get the idea that there is, and you're hearing some proof of it. On our first-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Art?
Hi.
Hi, this is Bill from Pennsylvania.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing very well. I agree with your comment. I believe in God, too, but there are just too many things that are left unquestioned. Michi Iacocca, with his extrapolation of superstring theory, shows we're still learning about dimensions with more to go. So everything is still up in the air as far as I'm concerned.
You better believe it. Yeah. Okay.
You know, I've been a nurse for 23 years, and I've seen, done a lot of things in my life and traveled all the United States.
Yeah, you're on duty as a nurse right now, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm on duty.
Yeah. Okay.
In prison.
That's right. It's a prison. Yeah, I had to call an extension to get through to you.
That's right. Okay. We've had a busy night, too. Interesting thing happened to me about 20 years ago at a nursing home when I was a night supervisor, like you, I'm a nighthawk. And nursing homes, for some reason, seem to attract this kind of activity. Maybe it's because there's internment places for folks who don't want to be there, and there's a lot of sad experiences.
That's right.
Well, I was cutting my teeth on the night shift there one night on the second floor in the elevator. Mysteriously, around 1 o'clock, began to open and close and go up and down the floor. I asked one of the aides, I says, is something wrong with this elevator? He says, no, that's George.
George?
I says, George? I said, yeah, I'm George. He used to be a resident here. He was wheelchair-bound, and he whiled away his hours going up and down the elevator all day until his bedtime. And when he died, that elevator just started doing that. Usually he does it in the wee hours of the morning. Well, yeah, right. Okay, I've been around. Yeah, I've heard this before. Well, day after day, I've been just kept the mental tally around 1 a.m. in the morning.
Uh-huh.
That elevator started kicking in, and I would go in there and I'd check the switches, because I'm a geek like you, being a ham.
Yep.
I want to see what's going on here.
Sure.
Well, there's nothing wrong with it, and it kept doing it until about 4:30 in the morning. One time we had an aide, a brand-new aide, come in, and the elevator at 1 o'clock, by the stroke of the hour,
started
moving up and down. She says, what's going on? She says, someone coming up to the floor. She says, no, that's George.
Says, by now, you're the one saying
that. Oh, yeah,
no,
absolutely. I've been there about 6 months. I said, okay, George is cool. You know, we learn to cohabitate with him. You know,
yes.
You can sense a spirit, too.
But, you know, maybe in a way, though, maybe it's not so cool for George. I mean, my God, here's a man who's in a wheelchair in life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you would hope, somehow, you would hope that in death he would be released from that.
You would think so, but it's almost like there's unfinished business there.
Oh, I hear you. But see, listen, thank you very much. Go ahead back to duty. There's two theories regarding the end of life. One is that as a ghost, you continue to do whatever you did at the moment of death. You know, if that's a suicide, then you keep doing that. If it's if you were an invalid in a wheelchair, then you keep going up and down that elevator. And so is it a tape loop? Is it just sort of a lingering memory? Or, in fact, is George the person in that wheelchair in some other dimension affecting this dimension, doing what he did during the latter years of his life, just going up and down in that elevator? It suggests some rather disturbing things about death, doesn't it? Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Ghost to Ghost AM. Hi. Hello. Going once. Going twice. Gone. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Ghost to Ghost AM. Hello.
Hello. Is it me?
Yes, it is.
Ah, this is Daryl from Missouri.
Hello, Daryl.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty well, thank
good,
you.
Good. Okay. See if I can tell this story short and not ramble as I tend to do.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks for the warning.
All right. So, my dad, he was kind of obsessed with death, and he passed away January 31st of 1981. And about 2 months after that, I had a dream about him. And in the dream, you know, it was very vivid. I told him that he had died, and he didn't know, and all this and whatever. And he told me that he could come back anytime I really needed him. So that was the dream and whatever. And so then, like, 10 years later, some things were going on, and I was feeling very depressed about silly stuff and whatever. And I just had this feeling like somebody was tapping me on the shoulder. I just had this constant feeling like somebody was trying to tell me something, tapping me on the shoulder, whatever.
Right.
And so I'm headed home one night. I work second shift, and it's like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I lived way out in the middle of nowhere. And I'm going down the road, and I'm just feeling very frustrated, and I'm doing about 100 miles an hour going down this road, this back road in the middle of nowhere. And I just let go of the steering wheel, and I just threw my hands up in the air, and I go, "What?" Because I just had this feeling like somebody was trying to tell me something, and I just wasn't getting it or whatever.
At 100 miles an hour, you
yes.
throw your hands off the wheel and say, "What?"
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And coincidentally, I just happened to be passing a real old cemetery right at that point in time.
Yeah.
So anyway, all I can say is that all of a sudden, I just got this intense feeling like, the only way I can describe it is like if you were a little pocket transistor radio and you had the antenna up and you touched your antenna to the transmitter.
Huh.
Just like the ultimate hum, overload, squeal, feedback, whatever. And the hair stood up on the back of my neck. And I guess I let off the gas and grabbed the steering wheel. I'm not really conscious of that at that point.
Huh.
And I'm only like 5 miles from home. I should have been home in like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I just got this, and I just heard him, and he started talking to me, and he's telling me, you know, I just wanted to let you know, I wanted to prepare you that all this stuff is going to happen to you, all this bad stuff, and I just wanted to prepare you for, you know, whatever. And he said, you know, your mom's going to get sick, and she's going to die, and you're going to get laid off from your job, and you're going to get divorced, and
wow.
blah, 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 and he just starts telling me all this stuff, and
and you knew this was your dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but, you know, it's like I was hearing it in my head or whatever. So
gee, you hear from the grave with just nothing but bad news.
Yeah. So I turned down the gravel road, and the gravel road is like a mile completely straight right to my house. And so I turned down the gravel road, and I'm just like coasting down the gravel road, and he's just telling me all this stuff. And I'm afraid to look, but I look to my right, and I can see him sitting in the seat beside me. And he's like, it looks just like him, but he's like translucent. And kind of bluish gray color or whatever, you know. And
yes.
But it's like when I look straight ahead, I can see him like clearly out of the corner of my eye. But when I look straight at him, he's like not quite as clear.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm just coasting down the gravel road. And he's telling me, you know, well, this, that, and the other, and I'm, and it's like as soon as I can think of a question, the answer's already there. And he's, it's like I'm a computer downloading information or whatever. And so I'm coasting down this gravel road, and like one of the things I was stressing out about was the brakes were bad on my truck, and I was like, oh, there's snow on the ground. It's January. I'm going to have to get out there, you know. And he goes, why don't you go up there to the house, to our old house in the garage, and build a wood fire and do it up there in the garage? And I'm like, I didn't even think of that. What, you know, what's wrong with me? And so I get right down there, and as soon as I get to the pond right in front of our house, there's this little pond. He's telling me all this stuff, and then he's gone, instantly gone. And so I pull up to the back of the house, and my wife, ex-wife now, comes running out the door. She goes, are you all right? Are you all right? Are you all right? And I go, yeah, why? And I'm just crying, you know. And she goes, because I was sitting in the kitchen watching out the window, and the whole time you're coming down the gravel road, there was this bright white light above the top of your truck, and I thought it was a UFO, and I thought it was going to beam you up or something.
Really?
Because then right when you got to the pond, it disappeared.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, no.
I said, no, it wasn't a UFO. That was Dad.
And you did just say former wife, so
yeah.
I assume the rest of what he said, including the divorce, all came true.
Yeah, my mom died 2 years later, 3 years later. I was laid off 3 years later.
And your divorce.
I was divorced 9 years later.
Whew. Well, maybe Dad will be back with some good news. You could certainly use some. All
hey,
right.
But the warning is at least worth it, you know.
Well, I guess so. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. So there's one of just plain outright contact, just straight on contact in a conversation. And it here's another thing I wonder about. Assuming that we make it to the other side in the manner suggested by all of these stories, how hard is it to manifest ourselves in the way, for example, that man did to his son? How hard is that? What energy does that take? In what manner is that done? But there's so many of them. There's got to be some truth to all of this. At the bottom of all of these stories, there's a lesson, and that lesson is that life doesn't end with the physical. Not if you're listening. It just doesn't. There's something else. The consciousness and who we are continue in some way or another. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. What is your name, please?
My name's Peter.
Okay, Peter. Where are you?
I'm in San Diego.
Okay, fire away.
Well, I almost didn't tell this story, because, then when your bumper music came on, when White Bird came on, I figured that was a sign, so I had to keep going with the story.
That piece of music is a sign, my friend. That's why I play
Well,
it.
You'll understand why.
All right.
About 20 years ago, I was very, very deeply in love with somebody, but it couldn't happen. And
she belonged to another?
He belonged to another.
He belonged to another.
Okay. But I tried to stay in touch every couple of months and give a call. And then one time when I called, I was told that he had died. And they'd had the funeral and everything, and I hadn't known anything about it. But I found out where he was buried, and I went up there. It was a small town. It was a large cemetery, but in a small town.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on a late on a Saturday afternoon in the fall, and there was nobody there, and I had no idea where to find his grave, so I just started looking. And
sure.
It was a very large cemetery, maybe 100 yards wide, maybe 300 yards long, ringed by forest. And there was an old section where there was stand-up headstones, and then there was a new section that had the brass plaques flat on the ground.
Well, they pack them in, you know. I mean,
yeah.
not a lot of the residents complain. So they
yeah.
Pack them in.
So I started just kind of wandering aimlessly around, hoping that maybe he was in a family plot in the old section where there'd be a stand-up headstone where I could see the family name. But then I couldn't find him, and it started to get late in the afternoon, and the sun started to go down, and I started to think I wasn't going to be able to find him. And I was on the far side near the woods, and all of a sudden this bird flies out of the trees, chirping really, really loud.
Yes.
And flies down about 20 or 30 yards and back into the trees. And I do not know why, but I followed that bird and walked down in the direction where that bird had flown. And when I got down to about where the bird had flown back into the trees, it came out again and flew another 20, 30 yards around. And so I just kept following. And I followed it pretty much all the way around to the opposite side from where I was.
Yes.
And then it came out of the trees and flew straight across the cemetery. And I just started walking, and about, and that was in the new section with the brass plaques flat on the ground.
Yes.
And I just started walking across the cemetery in the direction that that bird had flown. And about five or six markers in, there he was.
There he was. That bird took you to the grave.
That bird led me to his grave.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I see why you winced a little bit at White Bird.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, and good night. So there you have it. Yes, there may be something about birds. On the day my father died, you may remember I was on the air full time at that point. On the day that my dad died, a bat flew on our porch. I mean, bats just don't do that. We've never in all the days we've been here, it has never happened before. A bat just flew on our porch and wouldn't move. There was nothing apparently wrong with the bat at all. Nothing. He was fine. He just wouldn't move. And so we scooped him up, and, you know, it's warm here in the summer, so we put him in a shady spot, and when night came, the bat just left. But never, ever, ever has a bat just come to spend the day. That day, the day my father died, he did. That's a true story. You're on the air on Ghost to Ghost AM. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you, Art?
Just fine. What is your name?
My name is Rob, and I live in the greater Detroit, Michigan area.
Okay, Rob, welcome.
And I listen to you on CKLW out of Windsor, Canada.
Absolute monster out of Windsor, yes.
It's good hearing your voice again.
And yours, at least for the first time.
Yeah. My particular incident happened nearly, what was 50 years ago. I was a small child in 1953. And I lived in the northern suburbs of Detroit at that point. But in any event, I was in my bedroom at the age of three, and I suddenly popped out of my bed. And I was rather agitated and excited. And I noticed in the corner of the room where the wall and the ceiling intersect, there was an apparition of a very seductive-looking woman.
Ah.
She didn't appear in full body, but it was more like from the waist up. She had extremely pale skin, long black hair. She had a tight-fitting bustier on her. She was rather buxom. I was just simply mesmerized by looking at her and in awe, and I stood there for a minute, and...
You were in immediate lust.
Something of that nature. In any event, I was just staring at her, and I don't remember her lips moving, but somehow she was communicating to me, and she was summoning me, and she said, "Come here, blue eyes, come here, blue eyes, come here."
Oh.
And I do have blue eyes. So I started to approach her. I took a step or two forward, and I got towards the apparition as I saw it in the corner of the ceiling, and she said, "Stop," to me.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, she went poof, and she disappeared, and simultaneously when that happened, I had a sharp pain in my left eye, and I thought that was very strange that, you know, that had happened simultaneously with the poof.
Yeah.
So I went back to sleep and tried to, you know, retain whatever I could of my composure at the age of three.
Indeed. Listen, can you hold? We've got to do a quick
break. I
will
hold.
All right, good. Stay right where you are. A seductive ghost, huh? Well, as they go, that might be all right. From the high desert, this is Ghost to Ghost AM. And, of course, I'm Art Bell. Stay right there.
Take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
A little thing called Ghost to Ghost AM, which will continue in just a moment. Obviously, not everybody has had an experience with an entity, but as you can clearly see as you listen this morning, enough people have in enough ways that it merits your attention, if purely from nothing more than an investigative point of view. It merits your listening because so many people have, and what it means. Good morning. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air.
Hi. Am I on the air?
You are indeed.
Hi, my name is Brian. I'm calling from Davenport, Iowa. Originally I'm from New York. I still live out there, actually. I came out here visiting a friend, and the place where they live in is haunted. I just started listening to the show, actually, earlier this week. It's a great show. I like it. Very interesting. A lot of interesting stuff. And a very weird thing happened the other night. First of all, can ghosts sense fear?
Can ghosts sense fear? I've got to give you an honest answer, sir. I don't know. I would guess yes. It's just a guess.
Because, I don't know, I listened to the show and kind of like all the ghost talk, especially since they told me this place is haunted, and I mean...
So tell me what happened to you.
All right, the other night, right, I was listening to the show, it was like 4 in the morning, phone rang. One ring, then I hear a voice out of the...
First-time callers, area code 775-727-1222.
All right, well, he used some language that we cannot use on the air, so that's it for him. I understand that you're involved in the stories that you're telling, but if you use language that's not arable, well, then you won't be on the air. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes, sir. Hi. What is your first name, please?
My name is Bob. I'm calling from West Dundee, Illinois.
All right, Bob.
Listening to you from WLS out of Chicago.
Of course.
And I seen my father's soul leave his body.
You saw his soul leave his body?
Yes, sir, I did.
How did this happen?
Well, in 1997, he was diagnosed with cancer, and I took 2 months off of work to go down and spend some time with him, and did not expect to bury him.
Yeah.
But the cancer progressed very quickly. And my parents were married for 47 years, and my mother was obviously a basket case, so I took over as primary caregiver.
Yeah,
our whole family was down there.
That's a tough job.
It really is. It takes a lot out of you.
You bet.
I have a niece. At the time, she was 5, an older niece. At the time, she was 13, and my sister lives down there. We were all at his bedside. I was holding his left hand. My mother was holding his right hand,
mm-hmm.
and the others were gathered around. And when he took his last breath, I said, "He's gone." And the youngest one, the 5-year-old, ran out of the room hysterical. "He's dead. He's dead."
Mm-hmm.
I sent the older child out to calm her down. And my mother left the room trying to calm down the young child. And my sister and I were just in the room alone. And she was just crying hysterically. And just then, not even maybe 30 seconds after he had passed, I noticed what looked like smoke coming from his chest, but it was more formed. It was probably, I would say, about 3 inches long and about an inch wide, and it floated, not dissipating at all, until it hit the door of the bedroom, which was probably about 8 foot away from the bed. And once it hit the door, it just dissipated.
What was it like seeing something like that? I mean, that would freeze me, I think. It would freeze me in fear.
Well, the most surprising thing, I wasn't afraid. I think the most thing that shocked me, not seeing it, didn't really shock me. What really surprised me is the size of it, of how small it was. It was just very small.
This may surprise you, or maybe it won't surprise you, but, I've talked to people who have actually felt a soul move through them. A lot of, as you were, a lot of people are close to dying people. Many times they're even over them, hugging them. And I've talked to people who have actually felt a soul move through them as that
really?
other person died. In your case, you saw that soul.
Yes, I did.
What's that done to your belief system?
Well, I've always believed in God. I was engaged at the time, and I wasn't really, I believe in God, but I wasn't going to church. My wife is a very religious woman. And after that, I made it a point to get back to church every Sunday and finish my sacraments.
I guess that would make sense. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Rand, have a good night. Yeah, that would make sense, wouldn't it? Once you have an absolute belief, of course, religions depend on this. I mean, I'm told that we are controlled by religion, that we're kept in check by religion, that we don't misbehave because of faith and religion, and we don't go out and do dirty deeds and that sort of thing, right? Because of religion, it keeps us in check. But you can see how it would. And if you absolutely believed, you more or less would behave yourself. If you didn't believe in a hereafter, well, then what difference, I suppose, some would say, does it make what you do when you're here? Because there's really no ultimate reward or punishment when you're gone. So that serves the religions, to be sure. And maybe it serves us. And maybe, of course, it's true. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Sarah in Omaha.
Hi, Sarah.
How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Thank you.
Good. I'm listening to you on KFAB 1110.
Oh, the big monster there in the west.
Yeah. I have a ghost story for you.
All right. That's what we're here for.
Okay. When my daughter was a little girl, we lived in a big house, and it was a big brick house in Cleveland, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was that she kept getting out of her crib all the time, and she was about 18 months old, and she would get out in the middle of the night and go and play on the staircase. And I'd hear her laughing in the night, and I'd get up and go back down and get her and put her to bed. And she'd always have some toys around her. So anyway, on this particular night, we had some people over from out of town, some friends of ours, and we didn't have a guest room for them to sleep in, so we used to have people just sleep downstairs in the living room, would make arrangements for them to sleep down there. And this staircase opened up on the living room. It was a big house, and the staircase was an open staircase, and you could see through the staircase from the living room.
Right.
Anyway, so everybody went to sleep, and everything was fine, and we woke up the next morning, and we were kind of in the kitchen eating breakfast and everything, and they were talking about how cute our kids were. And I said, when did you meet, my daughter? And they said, last night they were playing on the stairs. And I said, was it early in the morning? Because sometimes she gets up and crawls out of her crib and everything.
Yes.
And they said, it was really cute how your son let her back upstairs and, looked like he was going to put her back to bed. And I said, I don't have a son. I just have the one daughter. And they looked at each other, and I looked at my husband, and we go, it's kind of strange that you saw two children.
Yes.
And they go, yeah, we saw two children playing on the stairs. And I said, that's impossible, because we just have the one child.
Right.
And so we kind of, at that point, realized that they'd seen two children. And after that, I was always, thinking that maybe she had a little playmate in the middle of the night that she got up to go play with. And so.
And the playmate took her back to safety.
Yeah.
All right.
Let her back upstairs.
Got you. Thank you very much. Well, there you are. What do you make of that? The prospect of children as ghosts is very disturbing. And so when we have the EVP people here, we're constantly getting the voice. Too many times we're getting the voice of children that appear to be on the other side, commenting on various things. But their little voices are unmistakable. These are children. That would mean that... What do we have here? Do we have two parallel worlds that intersect at time to time, from time to time? Is that what we have? Do we have a world where one little child might save the life of another child by leading her to safety, or that the invisible playmates maybe are visible to those who are claiming to see them? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello. Going once. Going twice. Gone. International line, you're on the air. Hello. Hello there. Going once. Going twice. Gone. On the guest line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Hi.
Yes, I was had previously submitted a story relative to the seductive ghost.
Oh, yes.
And I think that you were going to get back with me.
I was and omitted you. I'm sorry. And you had we hadn't finished. You had a poke in the eye.
Well, she had appeared to me, and then I had approached her, taking a step or two forward, and then she poofed, vanished, and then I had a very sharp pain in my left eye. I went back to bed. Subsequent to that, years had gone by. In the early 60s, I had developed eye problem. I had to get glasses, so I went to the ophthalmologist, and he was examining my eyes, and he noticed that I had a strange geometric mark in my left pupil. He had never seen anything quite like that in a child before, so he had asked me, you know, how I got that, and of course I was somewhat hesitant to relate anything as to the details of that whole, you know, incident. But it turns out that 50 years later, I still have the mark of this particular ghost as evidenced in my pupil in the form of a triangle. I had LASIK surgery about 4 years ago, and once again, I was examined by an ophthalmologist, and they were scrutinizing the triangle in my left pupil, wanting to know what it was.
Sure.
But that's it. You know, basically, I don't dwell on the thing, but for some reason, when she exited her dimension, she apparently went through my eye and left a mark.
I appreciate the story.
Thank you.
Thank you, and take care. So... That's another dimension entirely, and that is ghost stories where there is something that happened to you, some physical something that happened to you. In that case, his marred eye as a real thing for people to examine and see, and he knew when it happened, and it was a good-looking ghost. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I actually called a few minutes ago. I apologize about that mishap right there. What I had to say before...
No. The reason that I didn't allow you on the air is because you used language that was inappropriate
that.
On the air. One more chance. You do it again, you're out of here forever. Eternity. All right?
Ain't going to happen again. What
All
happened
right.
was the phone had rang at 4 in the morning, rang one time, and I believe the ghost... Have you ever heard of ghost haunting people in their dreams?
Well, I don't know. What's the deal with it ringing one time? So
it rang one time, and through the speakerphone thing, there was a really weird voice, and I couldn't make out exactly what it was saying, but it sounded almost like "go to sleep."
Well, I get those all the time, though. Usually,
at first I thought it was my friend messing around.
Well, usually it's somebody trying to sell me something. I mean, how do you know?
At 4 in the morning.
Oh, they'll call. Well, not too much.
Four in the morning. And not only that, we checked the caller ID. It happened three times that night, right after where my friend had gotten up, walked out in the other room. He thought I was messing around. I'm like, no. And I thought he was messing around. No. The phone wasn't in their room. The phone wasn't nowhere. In the morning, the phone ended up being found in the bathroom. So that's weird right there. We checked the caller ID. There was no recollection of a call coming in at that point in time in the morning or anything. And it happened three times, a very weird voice. I guess like also the my friend's girlfriend that lives here said the ghost is like she's seen it before. A hag? Old lady?
Did you say a hag?
A hag. That's what she described it as to me. And it almost sounded like, go to sleep.
Go to sleep. Well, then, that's what you should have done. Headed for the sack. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Me?
You.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
hi.
My name's Tim. I'm calling from Oklahoma, but I'm listening to a station out of San Antonio.
All right, Tim. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, this story begins in a hospital, actually, before the ghost, if you can call it that, it came about. But my dad died about 15 years ago, and the night before he died, some people told me to tell him that they had been to the hospital but hadn't been in to see him because they felt like they needed to just keep it together and be support for the family and stuff.
Sure.
And the next morning, he died. And immediately after that, just right at the same time, a clock stopped in their house and would not start back up again. A couple of months later, I was on a train from St. Louis to Minneapolis, which was several hundred miles away from where my dad died.
Right.
And when my dad had been in the hospital, he was in a coma for about a week. I kept meeting people that he worked with who were coming by the hospital, and they kept telling me, your dad is really proud of you. He talks about you all the time. And that phrase, your dad is really proud of you, is important. Because several months later, when I'm on this train, I went to the car behind the one we were riding in, which they had cleared out the car because they were going to drop it off overnight. But I had to go back there to use the bathroom because the bathroom in our car didn't work. There was one man back there.
Right.
And a very old black man with white hair. And as I passed him, we made eye contact, and he said, I talked to your father the other day. He's really proud of you.
Just out of the blue, he said that.
Just out of the blue, yeah. And so, this was in the middle of the night. I was about half asleep, so I didn't really think a whole lot about it. And as I got back to the car, I told the steward in the car I was riding in about it. Said, there's an elderly gentleman back there who seems a bit confused. Can you go back and check on him? And so the
less than a minute here.
Okay. The steward goes back there and comes back up a couple minutes later by himself, just looking at me like, what are you talking about?
There was nobody there.
Nobody. So I think I got a message from beyond.
It sounds very much like you did.
Yeah.
All right, sir. I appreciate your call.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. You're listening to Ghost AM. We invite your ghost stories. If you had something really scary happen to you, and we've got the phone lines, let's you and I rock. This is Ghost to Ghost AM.
West of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It's Ghost to Ghost all night long tonight. Good evening, everybody. If you've got a really good story, we've got the telephones, even though we appear to have a slight malfunction in the long-distance lines right now. We'll work with it, and we'll keep taking your stories. So lay heavily into the first-time caller line, the wildcard line, and you'll do just fine for a little while here. But they are having a typical Halloween kind of problem on long-distance lines. That's just the way it goes. Expect these kinds of troubles on nights like this. Top of the evening to you all. As we continue with Ghost to Ghost, we'll see how we do here with regard to whether we go 5 hours or not. I'm not sure about these telephones, but we'll make a good Halloween try. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, is this me?
Yeah, well, only you know that for certain, but it sounds like you. It sounds just like you, actually.
Well, I've been listening for a long time. I want to thank you and George for getting me through the night. I drive a truck. I'm sitting on the side of the road just outside Gallup, New Mexico. My name is Mead.
Well, all right. Welcome to the program, and you're very welcome. Happy to keep you awake. Awake is our job.
Yeah, I'll do a good job sometime.
So, what's up?
Okay, real quick, about 1993, my grandfather had emphysema, and he was sick for a long time, and I was praying, you know, that he wouldn't pass and this, that, and everything. Well, he did, and I got real angry and, you know, had a fit there where I was cursing God and this, that, and the other thing. And during that time, my mother was just distraught. I mean, it almost destroyed her.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I seen her, she's upset. And then I seen her, you know, at one time, and she's fine. She's happy, back to herself again. I'm like, what's wrong with you? And she said that she was sleeping in the house where they lived in Tennessee. And it was still dark outside. And she woke up with a light. And my grandfather was standing there. And he told her, you know, Kay, you grieve so long. You know, stop it. I'm in a glorious, glorious place. I wouldn't leave, you know, if I could.
Yes.
And that, you know, that calms her down. Well, that made me mad for two reasons. One, I didn't believe it. And the other one was that, you know, why didn't he come see me? I'm just as messed up as she was. And then I got thinking about it, and I was joking with people, well, Ellie, reason he wouldn't is because I'm famous with my friends for being spooky. You can open a door. They got hobbies of scaring me. It's so. I'd probably just leave him whatever room he was in and be gone.
You're sounding a little spooky now. Your cell phone's breaking up, so.
Okay. Anyway, I was sleeping, and I dreamed about him. And for the time he was, for like 2 years, my grandmother had paid to have a lake dug on their farm. And she had sunk all this money into digging Blumen Lake, and it would never hold water. And so when I dreamed about him, give you the short version, we went to the lake, and it was full of water. And the following day, I went to my grandmother's house because it freaked me out. And sure enough, the doggone thing, and it hadn't rained, Art, in like 6 months. And the thing was just full of water. And, I mean, it cured me.
It changes the way you believe things and what you believe, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, it's just inexplicable. I mean, there was no rain, and you know, for 2 years it would rain. And
oh no, I'm with you. It's quite clear. It was another message. Well, I don't know if that's enough. I too had a message, and I think that was a message from my father. But you know, I'm the kind of person who just requires this incredible, unobtainable, ironclad proof. And I haven't had it yet. But that's why I listen to these stories with intrigue. Because there are so many of them. It's so common. There's got to be something to it, don't you think? Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Hi, this is Joan in Alexandria, Virginia.
Hey, Joan.
And I'm listening on, I don't know what it's called anymore, but it's 570 a.m.
570 a.m. in Virginia somewhere. Okay.
Well, it actually comes out of Bethesda, Maryland, which is on the north end of Washington, D.C., and I'm on the south end.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay. I'm calling to tell you about a friend's house in North Carolina was built about 15 years ago, right out on the Outer Banks, one dune away from the ocean.
Yeah, Hurricaneville.
Yes. And we've known these people for a long time. They have a very large, multi-generational family, and they're always inviting other people to come and stay there. And so we went down one time to visit, and she said, "Now I want to warn you before you come that we do have a ghost. Or multiple ghosts."
Oh.
And I said, "Oh, great. I thought that was super. I have my chance." And she told us that there was a woman who walks through one certain bedroom who wears a dark, long, body-fitting dark vest with many buttons down the front, and she has a white blouse underneath it with long, loose sleeves. And that one time she walked in the room and somebody had put a crib with a baby there. And she walked right through the crib and the baby. And the mother was just horrified, took the child and went to a motel for the night, never stayed in the house again.
A normal reaction, I think.
The night we were there, my friend's giant 6'4" brother had slept out on the porch because the house was really crowded. And he came running in the middle of the night, terrified, because of all the boot stamping out on the porch. There were all these loud footprints. So the other aspect of this was that in the wintertime, when neither she nor her family members are there, there is one permanent family just on the other side of some bushes, you know, two houses, the length of a normal two house away. So it's maybe 50, maybe 100 feet away.
Right.
And they complained to her one time because of all the party noise all winter.
Huh.
And yet they didn't know who was staying there, so they were concerned that someone was breaking into the house because there were lights all night and their lights would move from one room to another as though people were not using the electricity, which was turned off for the winter. So they were using candles or oil lights or something, and that there was all this raucous partying going on all the time. So finally my friend contacted not an exorcist, but a psychic who lived down in the Outer Banks in North Carolina. And over the years, she got to know the locals, and she had heard about this woman, contacted her, and she came to visit the house and said that there was a shipwreck on that particular site, and that they, when they constructed the house, it had dug into it, and the ghosts were all disturbed, but they figured, well, if you put a house here, we'll just live in it.
Hmm.
But that they were actually shipwreck victims. So the exorcist or the psychic, I don't know whether she did magic, you know, I don't know what sort of thing she did, but she asked them to leave, that it was alarming renters, and the family didn't mind, and they accepted it, but would they please leave?
Did it work?
Yes.
They left?
Uh-huh.
So,
and the neighbors said they now see lights in the wintertime, the dead of winter, when there's no one else around, you know, for miles, because this is just this narrow.
So you mean they still occupy it when nobody's there?
But not their house.
But not the house.
But they see lights.
Just in the area?
Yes.
So
on a nearby
words,
dune, there are still these little flashing lights as though people are having a party and they hear laughter
singing. All right. Oh, well, that's pretty weird. That's another. So, in other words, you could request that a spirit or a ghost that's occupying the place of its death leave the place of its death and have that happen, but have them stay close by. So, what do we have here? Polite ghosts? Or spirits that have to follow the words of the living? Not sure, but interesting. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello there.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, my name is Michael.
Michael, you're going to have to speak up good and loud, Michael.
I better go on another phone here.
Yeah, we don't have a great connection, so.
Okay. Is that better?
Oh, that's much better. Yes, thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had an experience about 14 years ago, and I sent you an email about it. I really don't want to say where exactly
it
took place, because I remembered a few things about the situation afterwards that make it still kind of scary. What happened was, there was a period, I'm very nervous right now.
Oh. Well, just take a deep breath.
Okay, I've been taking lots of them.
Don't worry about it. You're just talking to me.
Well, you'll find out once I tell you the story.
Sure.
For about 7 or 8 months, maybe 9 months, I had these dreams, kind of like dreams, sometimes waking dreams.
Yes.
And I found myself thinking about places, kind of like in tropical areas, and sometimes during the dreams, I would ask whoever was giving me these dreams where it was. And the voice told me my dream, It's near Papua New Guinea.
Uh-huh.
I can't tell you where. So what happens is about 8 months later, some big changes happen in my life, and I decide, well, it's time to take that trip. So I'm heading out of the West Coast, and this is the part I forgot to tell you about in the email. I'm waiting for my flight, and all of a sudden, where I'm sitting, these two characters become apparent to me. And, you know, you've heard of Men in Black?
Yes.
Well, this was a man and a woman in black.
Okay.
Now, the man was like anything you'd see in a boardroom somewhere. He was older, and he was standing talking to the woman. Now, what happened was the man turned, talked to the woman. She had hair cut straight across the front of her forehead, down the sides, and around the back of her head. She was dressed all in black, and as she walked down the street, people would stop and notice, because she was very strange. And she had a book open, and she was writing, I believe, in right to left in the book.
Really?
Yeah.
Right to left. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, something very old, you know. Not many people do that, except in certain parts of the world.
That's right.
And then the man looked at the woman. He came over to me, and he stood right beside me. And he stood right beside me within arm's reach and stared at me, stared straight down. I didn't want to look at him because, you know, I didn't want a confrontation. I just thought, you know, strange people, right?
Yes.
So he goes back, and he's talking to the woman. And she looks up in the air, and she talks to him. And then he turns and he looks at me like he wishes I was somewhere else or something. He's not liking me at all.
And okay, we don't have a lot of time here.
Okay. So. Well, what happens is I wind up getting on the plane, and I head off into the Pacific. I get off of this plane, and the spirit that had been talking to me through my dreams, it kind of leads me up into this valley. I'm walking through this valley, and I'm going through where all of the orchards are.
So you went, in other words, you went to the place of your dreams.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I thought it was my dream. And I was thinking I would come to this place. I'm walking through the orchard. It's a full moon. And all of a sudden, I hear footsteps behind me. And I turn around just briefly to look, and there's nothing there. So I thought maybe it was a piece of fruit falling or something. So I walk into this open area, and I hear more footsteps. And then I look around to make sure, and there's nothing behind me. So I head up to the end of this valley, and I'm thinking, well, this dream, I'm going to come to it, and maybe these people that I'm seeing in this dream are going to be there, and I'll be safe.
Uh-huh.
I get up to the top of the valley, and I realize something's wrong. And I go to turn around, and all of a sudden, this black net comes over top of me.
A black net?
Yeah. And this thing can read my mind. I don't know what it is. And it starts to squeeze. And it's accusing me of all of the maybe negative things that have happened in my life. It seems to know this. And I know that I got to get out of this place. There's something wrong. And the only thing I can think, I can't breathe. I can't see. Like it was a full moon when I walked in. And then it's like I have this thick black net over top of me, and I can't see the stars or anything. I can barely see the moon.
Okay, only a minute left.
I'm heading out of the valley, and I look back, and this thing, I just warded off, and I call to every available spirit to help me. And finally, this thing leaves me alone. And what happens is I went through all of that, and I continued travels, and I traveled for about six weeks after this point. I wound up at this place close to Papua New Guinea through the Pacific. This family took me in, helped me get my ticket back to come back to the United States. They felt really sorry for me because I couldn't be here for Halloween.
Yeah.
And when I left it was the Philippines I left. I wound up coming back to the United States, and it was the day before. It was actually Halloween. And I got to spend Halloween with my family.
Excellent.
Happened is, through the whole thing, I found out that, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of faith in you know, my religion or whatever faith was.
Yes.
But I found out that there's spirit out there that takes care of me, and it protects me. And
it throws black nets over you, too. So that's an interesting concept, though, to try and locate. Have you ever had a repetitive dream? A dream that keeps coming back to you and coming back to you and coming back to you until you have the opportunity, which probably feels like deja vu at the time, to actually be at the location of your dream, to actually find the location of your dream, even if it would be as remote as New Guinea, for example. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, sir. What is your name?
Mike.
Hey, Mike. Welcome.
How you doing? I'm out here in L.A.
Yes, sir.
Well, here's a ghost story for you.
Fire away.
When I was around 14 years old, I was home alone, and we had a pool table in a big pool room in the house. And I was playing late at night. It must have been like at 11:30, something like that. And I finished up the game, and we had a wall rack that we would put all the balls and the pool cues and the sticks and everything on there. They would hold it on the wall. So I did that, and I was really meticulous because the house was haunted. So I would always make things almost like an obsessive compulsive. I'd put everything in an exact specific place so I knew where it was.
I do that anyway.
Yeah, because everything was always changing. So I put everything back, went to my room, and was getting ready to go to sleep, and I hear a great big crashing out in the room. So I run out through two other rooms to get to that room, and pool cue was lying on the pool table. Another pool cue was on the ground. There was the sound of a ball going down the chute, because the pool table was one of those kind that had chutes in it, so that all the balls ended up at the front of the table.
I have one just like it, yeah.
Yeah. So I heard a ball running down that, and there was the white ball, the cue ball, was banking off one of the felt edges of the table. Like somebody had just been taken a shot and put down the pool cue. So when I go to the front of the table to get the ball out of there, I notice that it's the eight ball. So that was kind of freaky. So then, after that, I'm freaked out because I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, this is an eight ball, bad luck. So I'm looking around, and I just feel this immense need to get out of the house. And I ran to the front door, but the front door wouldn't open.
All right, hold it right there. You run to the front door, but the front door won't open. That's good. We'll pick it up right there.
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033.
First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
It sure is, and we have a caller hanging, as it were, so let's go right back to him. You're back on the air again, sir.
Okay.
All right, continue.
So we left off at the front door. I couldn't open the door.
Yes.
And it's a pretty big door, and it's well-balanced, and it was really easy to open. You know, you didn't have to do a lot of effort. So the fact that I couldn't open it was alarming me because I had it unlocked and ready to go.
Of course.
And then all of a sudden, it opened. It pushed me back. Like I said, it was a heavy door.
All by itself.
All by itself. And that really freaked me out.
Yep.
Because it was almost like he was trying to fling me into the next room. Because there was a room right next to the entryway of that house.
Maybe it was.
Yeah. So that kind of was weird. So I pulled myself around the door and kind of threw myself out onto the porch, and the porch was kind of enclosed, so I ended up banging into this wall that was kind of on the other side of the porch, and then I ran down the porch over to a neighbor's house that was right next door and asked them if I could stay there until my parents got home.
Mm-hmm.
And that door, after I had exited the house, it slammed on itself. I mean, it just like slammed shut with a thud. And I was just kind of shocked, and I ran over there. My parents came back, and what was weird about that is that they didn't think anything was too weird about that when I told them. But years later, yeah, I would find out that my dad had experienced some strange things, and my brother had experienced some strange things there.
Well, you know, people tend not to tell each other about this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't. It's not something you talk about, unless, I guess, you're asked to.
Yeah.
As we do when we do these kind of programs. Okay. Well, thank you very, very much, and take care, and we'll be right back with more Ghost to Ghost. We don't need no stinking phones. We'll do 5 hours anyway. Where there's a will, there's a way. We'll do it anyway. This is Ghost to Ghost, and we'll make it a special 5-hour night. How about that? Huh? We'll continue to tell ghost stories. We want, of course, the very best, the very scariest stories that you can muster up. And with that in mind, you are on the air. Good morning. Hello. Yes.
Yeah.
What is your first name?
Dwayne.
Dwayne. Okay, Dwayne, welcome. Where are you?
Well, I used to live in Bend, Oregon. I'm down in Applegate, Oregon now.
All right, but I'm Oregon.
I'm an artist, and I used to travel to the big art shows.
Oh.
And when I would take off and leave for 2 or 3 weeks, I had a neighbor that was in his 70s at the time. His name was Tony, and Tony would feed my cats, watch the house, and make sure everything was okay. Well, this went on for years and years, and one night I came back and sat down in my black chair and just relaxing, playing with the cats, and the rocking chair next to me started to rock.
Tony.
And Tony started to materialize.
Started to materialize.
Yeah, and Tony and I always talked about the hereafter and reincarnation. And
now, Tony was, I take it, passed on at this point.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Tony was always telling me he was going to stick around for a while and watch people.
Yeah, I wonder if we have that choice. So there was Tony. Did he materialize completely or what?
Quite completely, and I reached over and shook his hand, and I said, "How on earth did you do that, Tony?"
Yes.
He says, "Ectoplasm." He says, "This was really, really hard to do." And he said, "I had a message. I want you to do something for me."
You're not pulling my leg.
No.
He said, "Ectoplasm, it's really hard to do."
Well, Tony had a real sense of humor.
Obviously.
Laugh constantly, and he was laughing just like Tony was in real life. And I said, "Tony, what happened? How do you do that? And he says, didn't you hear? I'm dead. And I said, what do you mean you're dead? You're sitting right here. He said, no. He says, I'm dead. But I told you I was going to stick around. And he wanted me to tell his wife that everything was okay, that he was just as happy and alive as he was in real life.
Yeah, right. And through all this, how are you holding up? I mean...
Oh, I just thought it was cool. These things have happened to me over the years. I'd be driving home.
So it didn't bother you?
No, one thing that happened in Sandy and Pass quite often, it was always a runner. And you could slow down, go up next to the runner, and look at him and say hello, and he'd fade away.
On the highway, huh?
On the highway. And there was also a beautiful blonde gal that would always be walking the highway. And you'd stop for her, she'd get in the back seat, and you'd start to drive off, and she'd fade out.
And she'd fade out. You know, these stories are rife in Oregon. I mean, they're really all over the place in Oregon. Oregon is famous for those kinds of stories, especially the hitchhikers that suddenly disappear. There are even hitchhikers who tell drivers stories of coming Armageddon and really awful things, and then disappear. A lot of those stories recently. First-time caller line, you're on the air, Ghost to Ghost AM. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, my name's Jerry. Well, since I was a kid, I've seen several different things. I guess I've been kind of sensitive to it.
Uh-huh.
And actually, it's kind of funny is that some of the spirits have told me that all they really want is to be seen and to be acknowledged.
I take it that's a problem on the other side, that you're not seen, you're not acknowledged, and that must be rather frustrating for the people on the other side.
Yeah, it seems if you can see them or feel them, that you become a magnet for them.
That would also make sense. I mean, if they finally find somebody who can either sense them or know they're there and, you know, is acknowledging them, giving them feedback, something they don't have on the other side, then naturally they're going to, you know, they're going to be drawn to that person.
Well, unfortunately, I had a very bad one that stuck to me and stayed with me for several years and occasionally still does little things to let me know that he's still around.
Like what?
Well, moving things around in front of me. Sometimes I'll see as a shadow, like a shadow person.
Yes.
Or out of the darkness, I'll hear him call my name.
And so you know it's this person? Same
yeah,
person,
actually, yeah? He gave himself a name. He said his name is Tommy.
Tommy.
Yeah. And the way I met him was a long time ago. It was probably about 10 years ago. I was at a friend's house, and one of them decided that they wanted to play the Ouija board. And he made it out of a piece of paper. Yeah. So that goes to show you it's not the game.
It's
the people.
It's your will, your wish, your intent. It's not the thing. All you've got to do is sit there and wish it to be, and the door opens.
Yeah, exactly. You call them, and they'll come.
Yeah.
But one thing that he did do that isn't normally on the board is he put a pentagram on there. I had never seen one of those before. I never seen a Ouija board, so I didn't know that wasn't supposed to be there.
I don't know. Bad idea.
Yeah, I found out later that pretty much means you're calling evil spirits.
And along came Tommy.
And, yeah. And at first he said he was a small child that was killed in a car wreck in the 40s. His uncle was drunk, and he hit a tree, and he went through the windshield and cut his neck, and he bled to death.
That's quite a story. You're saying he lied?
Yeah. Yeah, he told me he lied later. And so, anyways, he tells us this whole story about how he died. And at first he was really nice, and we were just asking different questions. And then he started to get meaner. And we started asking him, are you really a small boy? And finally he said, no, I'm not. Are you stupid? And started, you know, insulting everyone. And some of the girls started getting scared, and so they were telling the people that were touching the little ring to tell him to leave. And he started saying, I can do whatever I want, and I won't leave unless I want to. Mm-hmm. And so they got pushier and pushier, and finally he said, you'll be sorry. And so that night, everyone, they split their different ways. And two of the girls on their way home, one, the girl driving, looks in the rearview mirror, and she sees a shadow person sitting in the back seat. And so they're freaking out. She drives as quickly as she can home. They run inside. It actually was walking back and forth on the porch, and they could see it like a three-dimension shadow. And then
See, all right. I don't know if there's more to it, but I mean, that's the lesson. These things walk through. You open the door, they walk through, and they can be with you for years.
Yeah. I see, out of all the people there, it stayed with me.
Yeah, I got that. How old are you now?
I'm 28.
And 28, and it still is with you.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me as much, but that night, one of the people at that house happened to be my girlfriend, and she called me crying, saying something was scratching her wall. I thought, well, maybe it was a mouse in the wall just making a little scratching noise. And I heard a loud scratch, so I said, I'm coming over to pick you up. I'll be right there. So I turn on my light, and I get up, and I hear something over my head. And I look up, and the chains from the fan are just swinging from side to side, hitting the fan.
Yes.
I thought, oh, my gosh, what do we do? So and then I hear something behind me. I turn around, and the cord for the blinds, it's pulling up into the air and then dropping and hitting the blinds. And it's just pulling up and dropping, pulling up and dropping. So I know that we did something really bad.
Yes, you did.
I went over there to pick her up, and on her wall, the scratches started at the ceiling, and they went all the way down to the pillow right by her head. But they actually went through the paint, the spackling, and through the sheetrock into the middle where the chalk was at.
Let me tell you something. You need to get some help.
No, it's pretty much left me. As long as I don't bother it or encourage it, it doesn't seem to bother me.
When you least expect it. I mean, good luck to you, but I'm telling you right now. Unless you have solid evidence, this thing really has left. Believe me, it is still with you. It's still there. And whatever it was you let through, it was definitely not good. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Let me get away from my wife's alarm clock.
Oh, yes.
Well, first off, let me say, good to hear you on the air.
Thank you. Where are you?
We're in Port St. Lucie, Florida here.
All right. And your first name?
And I have to get up away from that clock.
Sounds like you're...
Yeah, I've got a bad back, so I'm up late at nights.
Oh, I know all about that, yeah.
Oh, I know you do.
What's your first name?
Aaron.
Aaron, okay.
Yep, KG4YQK.
Oh, you're a ham. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Very good.
Look forward to hearing you on the air.
Thank you.
My sister and I, when we were kids, we had kind of a dysfunctional family, obviously. And
I'm beginning to think all of America is dysfunctional.
I think so. Uh-huh. I don't think there's any Ward Cleavers out there.
That's right.
So, for the longest time, you know, strange things used to happen in the house. My sister, when we used to come home from school, used to literally come home and pet the porch and go, nice house, nice house, because she was scared to go inside.
Sure.
And we'd be sitting in the living room watching TV, and you'd look over, and all of a sudden one of those little pictures, you know, that you would sit on a nightstand or something like that, would just kind of go pew, and flip up in the air and then land on the ground and land straight up. You know, that was freaky enough.
Of course.
My 13th birthday, I decided, we were getting ready to have, my mother was going to throw me a party. We were going to have a few friends over. And so I, you know, ran, took a shower, whatever, and my bedroom was on the top floor along with my sister. And nobody was upstairs, and so I went to cut on the light in the hallway to run up the steps.
Right.
And light went out. Poof. I said, oh, man. So I'm 13. I think we just got through watching Jaws, you know, earlier that week. And I ran into the kitchen to get the flashlight, which was up over the counter. And had my towel on. Of course, there's a window there. And the towel fell off, and I'm trying to reach for the flashlight. Of course, Mom didn't like that, so get up here and change. So I go running up the steps, and I get all the way up to the top of the steps. And a big sweeping arm, you know, to reach in to cut my light on in the bedroom. Boom, I hit something midstream. Huh. I'm thinking, I know there's nothing there because it's just empty space there.
What do you mean you hit something? Like what?
I ran into something like a being or a person with my hand. It stopped my arm in mid mid-stride.
Uh-huh.
And so at that point, you know, I knew something wasn't right. And I looked up, and I saw the most, the only thing I can describe it as, it was like, if you ever heard of looking at terror, these yellow eyes, had to be a demon, because all I could see was terror. You're looking up at it, right?
Yes.
And so I'm screaming like a banshee at the top of these steps.
This sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah, except I lived it. And so then I jumped down the entire flight of steps. And then with one more jump, I jump across the living room floor.
Yes.
And my mother, you know, of course, the hair on the back of her neck stands up. She goes running upstairs with a butcher knife out of the kitchen, going to try to get whatever's getting at her kid.
Yeah.
But here's the point of it. I got to thinking about it. I used to read the Bible a lot, and I used to, and I still do, by the way. But I always kind of admired the gentleman who had the fight with Satan in the graveyard, knocked him over a gravestone.
Uh-huh.
And I got to thinking about it. I had kind of wanted to do the same thing. And
I
think I bought that on myself.
That's what I was going to ask. You think you bought it on yourself?
I did.
I think. Well, have you been listening to these Ouija stories?
Yeah, that's a very bad idea.
Yeah, as I keep saying, it's not the board.
No,
it's the intent and the wish. And you had all of that and didn't need a board and brought it on yourself, didn't you?
That's right. You know, the mind is a gateway, and be careful how you work it.
Oh, it certainly is. Thank you, brother.
Look forward to hearing you on the land.
Take care. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. This is Robin. I'm from Buffalo, New York. Well, actually, Kenmore is a suburb.
Hey, Robin.
Hey. And great to hear you on the air and stuff
Thank
like
you.
That.
Thank you.
At my house, you know, we've had a number of events happen over the past few years. Most of them are pretty benign, occasionally just irritating.
Yes.
The creepiest thing, though, I think that ever happened, and I'm not sure if this is a ghost or a poltergeist or exactly what this was, but when I was about 12 years old, I was doing my laundry like I normally do, downstairs in the basement, sitting there folding towels. Our house is fairly old. It was built in the 20s, not horribly old, but enough that we have to have a jury-rigged clip lamp over the washing machine.
Oh, yes, those little lamps that have little clips on them, and you just... Clip them on something, yeah, okay.
Yeah, you just clip them up. They're real cheap and, you know, that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
I'd already been down there for a while, you know, just doing my, you know, doing my thing. And all of a sudden, I just noticed, I'm like, there's a buzzing noise coming from this lamp, which, of course, is on. And I kind of stopped and looked up at it. And as I started to watch it, the noise started getting louder and louder.
Mm-hmm.
And as that happened as well, it began to shake.
Oh.
Now, over the next few seconds, sort of built up to a crescendo, and by the end of this, it was just violently shaking, and letting off this, you know, you'd see it. It was just like this, it was like blurring a little bit, like it was just really shaking, and then when it really kind of reached, I suppose, a fever pitch, all of a sudden a flame shot out of it.
Oh,
about a foot. Immediately after the flame shot out, a black blob object, probably the size of the old 50-cent. Pieces of money, maybe a little bigger, came flying straight at my head.
At your head?
Yeah, and my first instinct was just duck.
Oh, my instinct would be duck und run.
And I ducked, and I had my head down for a second, and
yes.
I went, what was that?
Yes.
I probably thought it a little more colorfully than that, but, you know, just, what was that? Got up, looked around. First thing I did was I spun around, and I looked to see is there, like, any dead moths or anything around. I didn't see any insects. Nothing whatsoever. Then the next thing I thought was, I'm like, oh, my God, I got to turn the light off. Maybe the light just, like, burst or something.
Yeah.
Turn the lamp off. It was, you know, kind of hot. Couldn't really, you know, touch it, but I kind of carefully turned around, looked it. Bulb hadn't broke or anything like that. Turned it back on. It worked fine. No buzzing noise, no nothing.
You know? What do you think you met up with?
I really honestly, you know, I'd love to say it was a ghost, it was a poltergeist. But I just don't know.
You just don't know. Well,
it wasn't particularly nice.
No.
It wasn't very friendly. I mean, we've had, you know, where my father and I have heard something, you know, heard a mumbling voice at the same time in different areas of the house.
Gotcha. Listen, we've got to go.
All right.
We're out of time, but thank you very, very much for the story. All right. We are going to go into hour 5. I'm just going to go right on ahead and extend the program. Why not? You're listening to Halloween 2003. This is Ghost to Ghost AM, and I'm Art Bell.
Flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard and they use them to come.
Take a ride? Well, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Coast to Ghost AM. Good morning, everybody. Soaring into hour five of Coast to Ghost AM. Why not? Let's do one more hour, shall we? It's your show, your stories. And I don't know. For the rest of you who aren't calling in, those who aren't getting through, sit back, listen to these stories, and decide in your own mind, all religion, everything else aside, if what you're hearing doesn't go an awful long way toward definitely hinting, whether you've had the experience or not, that there's really something happening out there after death. There's really something waiting for us on the other side. It won't be all over. Not all over. Just the physical part of it. As you lie there in the dark, or probably semi-dark, listening to all this, you really have to start thinking about it a little bit. Thinking about the reality of physical death and what may come after. And indeed, as you listen, how can you deny that something must be there? It may or may not be to your liking, but there must be something there. And good morning. You're on the air, Coast to Ghost AM, or Ghost to Ghost AM, as it were. Hi, where are you?
Portland, Oregon.
Portland, huh? And your name?
Cynthia.
Okay, Cynthia.
And I listen on 1190 KEX.
The mighty KEX in Portland, of course.
Well, I have kind of a spooky story.
Okay, you're going to have to speak up good and loud.
Hi. Okay, I attended U of O about 20 years ago.
Right.
And I lived in this beautiful sorority. It's the oldest on campus. It's historically registered. It's a big old brick timber Tudor with a tower and many nooks and crannies.
Beautiful. Sounds beautiful.
Yeah, and it's beautiful, and it never seemed spooky to me living there because it was always full of lively women and music. And
oh, we all know from having seen all the ghost stories in the world that lots of things happen in girls' dorms.
Well, one spring break, they always close up the sororities during spring break. You can't stay there during the break. But I had a flight that didn't leave till...
Wait a minute. What kind of attitude is that? I mean, you're going to go off and spring break it, right? And they won't even let you in the dorm where you'd be cool.
I think it's a financial issue.
I see. All right.
But I had a flight the following day after they were closing up the house, and I was going to get a hotel. But I had a good relationship with our house mother, and she said she'd kind of break the rules and let me stay there.
Uh-huh.
So I stayed in this huge sorority all by myself one evening.
Creepy enough, huh?
And I'm guessing it's about 10 to 12,000 square feet. Huge building. It's three stories with a full attic, a basement.
Right.
About 40 bedrooms. And my floor was on the third floor, overlooking the Mill Race. It's this river that runs through campus, kind of up in the trees. And my room had a bed that was built up, kind of built in. It was about 4 feet off the ground.
Yes.
And the ceilings were really low also. Very cozy room. And I had this bank of windows I could look out to. And it was, there was a moon that evening. And I read a book and cuddled into bed and fell asleep. I didn't think anything of being completely alone in this huge building. And I was sound asleep, and something absolutely jarred me awake. I mean, just almost like someone grabbed your shirt and pulled you up.
Uh-huh.
And it's like the atmosphere had changed. It's like the room had the air just sucked out of it.
Yes, when these things begin to happen, had you been awake enough, you would have felt it prior to the beginning. There would have been a sort of a foreshock of feeling. But then when the incident is underway, it's big time.
Well, it happened so fast, and I was wide awake. My adrenaline had just dumped into my system. And I was just laying there going, oh, my gosh, what's happening? And remember I said it was a moonlit night.
Oh, yes.
And it was a little bit windy. And I started seeing these little wispy, shadowy figures hovering around the ceiling, kind of going in a circular pattern.
Uh-huh.
Kind of like 4-inch wispy, I don't know what they were, demon things.
Yeah.
I was very scared. The room got very cold. And the room slowly filled up with these things. They were whirling over my head, making this shoo, shoo sound.
Oh, brother.
I was terrified. Because all of a sudden it really hit me that I'm alone in this huge, huge building.
Yeah, and when you're in a dorm, nobody hears you scream.
Well, this is a huge house, separate from everything.
Uh-huh.
And while this is happening, the phone starts ringing way, way down the hall. It's probably 10 bedrooms away. There's this little tiny closet with one phone for the whole floor.
Yes.
It's ringing and ringing and ringing. I'm too scared to get up and get it. Who would be calling? It's about 3 o'clock in the morning because I looked at my clock. And I had just finished a book called Satan's Cellar. It's actually a Christian book. So maybe that opened the door, but it's a Christian book. And I was recently baptized, get this, at Applegate Christian Fellowship, where this other guy that just called in lives.
Yes.
I was a new Christian, and this book was about a young boy who was raised in a very Christian family, very goody-two-shoes his whole life. And when he was a teenager, he really rebelled and ended up getting into Satanism and how he reverts back into Christianity.
So, you see, your mind was in that set.
It could be, but
it,
in
yeah, it could easily be.
This book, one thing I really remembered is it had the prayer that you're supposed to say if you feel evil or demon after you. And it's, Satan, get thee behind me. And I said that.
Satan, get thee behind me?
Yes.
Ah.
And Art, the room cleared instantly. It's like the air got sucked back in. It got warm. And
the event was over.
And I was completely at peace. The phone had stopped ringing. And I was just warm and cozy. And I said another prayer just to keep me safe. And I had one of the best sleeps of my life that night.
All right. Got it. Thank you very, very much. You see, it just does not surprise me. She had just finished a book, though it be a Christian book, on the subject, you know, of the devil. And so that was on her mind. And I think one other thing that's clearly coming out of this program tonight is that you don't need an object. You don't need any sort of accoutrements. You don't need anything to get to the other side except your mind. And if you focus your mind on bridging that little gap, you bridge it all right. Now, what walks through, that's an entirely different situation, but you bridge it. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Hi.
Hi, Art. How are you?
I'm all right. What is your first name?
Steve. Boise, Idaho.
All right, Steve. Welcome.
Thank you for taking my call, by the way.
Yes.
I'd like to tell you a story. My old grandparents, great-great-grandparents, they used to own a mine up near Grimes Creek. which is near Idaho City, up in Idaho.
Is that a gold or silver mine or what?
It's a gold mine.
Gold mine.
It's an old gold mine. Idaho City is an old gold mining town.
Right.
Anyways, long story short, my great grandfather and his brother owned a mining company, and the mine they sold all of them but one, and we kept one in our family. And I'd been hearing stories and stories and stories about the mine and how much gold was still up there, and they never mined it because it wasn't profitable for them,
mm-hmm.
because they would have had to pay the workers and everything.
Sure.
And I went up there one day, and I got a map and went up to the roads above Grand's Pass, which is where the mine is, and I stopped in to check it out. And I happened to walk in the mine, and I looked across the creek, and there was like this old, I don't know how to describe it, a Victorian-style house. It was about 3 stories tall, just a beautiful, beautiful, almost like farmhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, that's really a neat house, and it didn't look like it had been dilapidated at all. And so I took my little flashlight, and I went into the mine, and as I walked in, I found a set of old mining tools, like a hand drill and a pickaxe and like a pan also.
Okay.
And so I walked back into the mine, and I walked back into the mine, and I stopped, and I was like, gee, you know, I wonder where the gold is, and I'm looking around, and I can't find it. And so I start drilling into the wall with these old tools, and a gentleman dressed in a business suit and a top hat, you know, almost like 1890s, 1900s era, comes, and he looks at me, and he says, "You're doing that wrong, son."
Oh, you're kidding.
No. I said, "Excuse me?" And I'm looking around, and I'm thinking, where did this guy come from?
Yeah.
And I say, "Okay, what's the right way?
How about, who are you and what are you doing here?"
Well, it didn't even cross my mind.
All right.
I guess I had what you would call gold fever, if that makes sense.
He was going to show you how to get it. Yeah. Oh, it does make sense. Humans have an unnatural attraction to gold. All humans do.
It's bizarre how much gold will affect people.
You're correct.
So anyways, he comes over without missing a beat, and he takes the tools out of my hand, and he grabs my hand, and he walks me down to the edge of this mine shaft, and he sinks the pickaxe into the wall, and he starts drilling, and he's like, "Okay, the rest is up to you." And I said, "Okay, thanks for your," and I turned around, and he was gone. The guy had just disappeared, and so I sunk my pickaxe in there, and sure enough, out popped a nugget. And
he took you right to it.
Right to it. And so I ended up walking out, and as I happened to go back to the car when I was all done and everything, and I'd gotten about 3 good-sized nuggets, I happened to look over, and the house wasn't there anymore. The house had been... The house was gone.
Wow.
It had almost disappeared, but out front there was still this old hitching post. And I walked over to the hitching post, and I just couldn't figure out what was going on. And I looked on the hitching post, and it had Wells, which was the name of my great-great-grandfather. That was his last name.
Right.
Inscribed on the post. And so I don't wonder if maybe my great-grandfather came back to give me some mining tips.
My God, the power, though. That's really a cool story. Really a cool story. Thank you.
Thank you, Art.
Right, take care. That's really a cool story. What if the entity on the other side, the relative, has enough power to not just manifest himself, but manifest an entire setting that this man would see? A home, an old ranch house that's not there anymore, that wasn't really there in the first place, along with himself in period dress and all the rest of it, taking him right to the gold? That's quite a bit of power. That's a lot of power. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning. Your name?
My name is Terry, and I'm calling from Topeka, Kansas, and I'm listening to you on KMHA AM.
That's the way to do it, Terry. Thanks. What's up?
Well, I had a little ghost story for you, but it's not as scary as the others, but it's very true.
and it concerns my grandmother.
Very true is all that counts. I want people to understand that there is something after this life, that there really is. It may or may not be to our liking, but it ain't all over when it seems it's all over.
Oh, no, it's not.
Yes. So proceed.
Well, I was entering high school 1 year and when my grandmother died, and, well, let me jump ahead here because I know you don't have that much time. Anyway, I was in a car wreck, and a girlfriend of mine and I went to Lawrence, Kansas to do some shopping. And on our way back from Lawrence, we were about 5 minutes outside of Lawrence when I decided, I had realized that I hadn't had my seatbelt on in the car. And
oh, yes.
So anyway, I had just made a conscious thought that I wasn't going to put it on because we'd be home in about 20 minutes, and I wanted to go through all the packages of everything that I had bought that day. So anyway, I'm going through all my packages and looking at everything that I bought, and then a few minutes later down the road, all of us were coming up alongside a truck, a large truck that was just directly ahead of us. And anyway, so I'm sitting there looking at my things, and all of a sudden I hear a voice, and my grandmother had been dead for about 10 years
mm-hmm.
when this happened.
Yes.
Anyway, all of a sudden I heard my grandmother's voice, and she yelled at me in my left ear, and she said, "For God's sakes, Terry, you have to put your seatbelt on now." And I just went, and I looked up at my friend, and she was just listening to the radio, and she obviously hadn't heard it. And I said, "Oh, my God, Donna, did you hear that?" And she said, "No, what?" And I said, "Oh, nothing." I said, "I've just got to put my seatbelt on."
Uh-huh.
So I put my seatbelt on, and within 2 minutes, all of a sudden we hear this explosion, and this truck next to us had a blowout, and it was a huge truck, and so it just starts throwing debris in front of us and everything, and my friend screams and puts her hands up to her face, and I'm like, "Donna, just calm down, take your hands off your face, put them back on the steering wheel, and drive," and I told her to slow down. So she was just scared. And so anyway, she starts slowing down. Well, this truck, because it had a blowout, you know, it tries to slow down as well.
Yep.
So we're caught. And so anyway, this truck suddenly starts swerving back and forth, and I know it's going to fall on us pretty soon because he was doing about 70 miles an hour,
mm-hmm.
and we were doing about 65.
Mm.
And so anyway, she slows down, and this truck starts swerving, and he's going to drop it any minute, and you can tell. And so I just told her to floor it. So she floors it, and we get right about to where he's about right across from the passenger seat where I'm sitting.
Yes.
And suddenly he just jackknifes around and slams into us.
Oh, my God.
It was horrible. And anyway, he throws us into that center median, those cement block things, dividers.
Sure.
He throws us into it, and then we go into a spin end to end, and then we hit one of the openings down the road a little ways, and when we hit it, it throws us back out into the front of this truck.
Holy smokes.
It was horrible.
Yeah, that's a big wreck.
It was. And as soon as he hits us the second time, we immediately flip over his hood, and he just really slammed into us this time.
Good God.
And we were airborne, and all I can remember are about 2 flips in the air.
Yes.
And, well, we were told later that we flipped 5 times in the air before we hit the ground. And
holy smokes.
It was a terrible car wreck.
Yeah.
And anyway, so we land, and we land upside down on the roof of the car. And she's okay, and I'm suspended in midair.
Yeah.
By my seatbelt, and it's strangling me, and I can't breathe. And so I'm trying to get this seatbelt off of my neck, and well, my right arm, though, which I was holding on to the little hand thing up on top as we were flipping, my hand was just crushed underneath the metal, and I couldn't see it. But all I could see was blood coming down, and my head is laying in the glass from the rear windshield. And all of a sudden, this man comes up, you know, these people just rush up to our car.
Yes.
And, you know, are really concerned, and they want to help us. A man and woman go to my friend's side of the of the car, and then this other gentleman comes to my side, and I'm just really upset, and I'm scared, and he grabs my arm, and he just starts stroking my arm, and he tells me to focus on his voice, and I said, how can I do this? I'm strangling. I can't breathe.
Yeah.
And anyway, and I'm just entombed inside this metal, and I can just barely see my friend through all the metal. And anyway, he just tells me to calm down and listen to his voice and focus on him.
Uh-huh.
So I did this, and he just talked constantly. And he told me that when the truck hit us the first time, he had immediately called 911, and so they were on their way out. So anyway, he said just to hang on. Well, they tried to get us out of the car, and they couldn't get us out.
Not a lot of time left, hon.
Okay. Anyway, so finally the paramedics get there, and the highway patrol, they get us out of the car. And I'm looking for this man because I want to thank him.
Of course.
And so I'm looking around at all these people, and I see one man standing while the others are kneeling around us. And I look up at him, and I just thought, oh, my God. And I look at him, and I said, has anybody ever told you that you look just like Jack Palance? And he just threw his head back and laughed, and then he leaned down and grabbed my face with his hands. And he said, I am, honey, but that's not important now. The important thing is that you're alive and you're going to be okay.
Oh, what a story.
All I could think of, I have to
all right,
think.
Listen, hon, I've got to go. What
okay.
A whale of a story. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Y'all, good night. This is Ghost to Ghost AM.
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
From the high desert town of Pahrump, Nevada. In fact, this is Ghost to Ghost AM. I'm Art Bell, and we're hour number 5 right now on this morning. It's good morning to do 5 hours, isn't it? Tim. That's a very interesting fast blast from Tim in Los Angeles, who says, Art, I'll never, ever, ever listen to Ghost to Ghost again. Never. I was driving home listening to your show, and I saw a ghost floating. I swerved, nearly hit a cop car. The cop saw what I saw, asked if I was okay, and told me to go home. Yeah, Tim. Well, I never said that listening to this program wasn't a conduit for something to happen to you. It didn't come with that guarantee, Tim. In fact, we may be as much of a focus and an open door as any you might create. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, how's it going, Art?
It's going okay, sir. What's up?
All righty, I'm Michael. I'm calling from Pueblo in the Rocky Mountains. I'd like to start out and saying yes. You're very correct, as Ouija boards are channels.
Oh, sure.
Little tools that are used for
and harnessing the mind.
Yes.
Well, anyway, I'd like to start out. I was in Boone, Colorado, a small town. My friend had a friend lived with his parents, and he had a brother, and they had another trailer by this pre-established house that was there.
Uh-huh.
And he got to move into this house, and I was with him, and we're setting up an entertainment center in front of a big picture window because we didn't have any other place to put it. And we heard a growl on the other side of the window. We're like, oh,
man.
What was that, you know? And I jumped on the couch. I was like, and he said, well, I heard it too. You know, we took it as a coyote or something. So the next day, we were talking to his brother about it, and his brother started going on about when they first moved there, he saw a ghost outside of the house walking with a limp. Or not a ghost, a person, actually. It wasn't transparent or anything. So he grabbed his father's .22 and went out front, and he had a dog named King and always barked at anything. And it was just sitting there, you know, nothing going on at all. So he went back in while he was telling us this. He got up and he described the limp. And about at that same time, we heard an intense, like, well, it started out small from the back rooms of the house.
Yes.
And it, like, moved up to the living room, and it got very, very intense and very, very loud.
What noise? What are you talking about?
It was almost like about the same growl we heard the night before, but very loud.
Yes.
And the house was and it scared us so bad that we had so much adrenaline that we just sat there. We didn't even move for almost an hour.
And well, that's how young people react. Older people have they have heart attacks and
all
die.
All three of us.
You know? Yeah.
And, about 2 hours later, then it come about dawn, we're still sitting there trying to contemplate what just happened. And his dad came in the kitchen, and he almost shot his dad with a gun because he was so scared. And then we got out of the house then that morning, and we finally were walking in the fields. We went back in, got enough guts. We went down the cellar or the attic where we think this noise went.
The cellar or the attic, which?
I mean, not the attic, the cellar, my bad. And it's a little teeny, I don't know, 10-foot by 10-foot area down in there.
How old were you when you did this?
I was, 19.
19. And must have been really stupid. I mean, because then you're going to go down into a basement and down to a little confined space in a haunted house where something had just growled at you and kept you there all night long.
Well, inside of there, well, we figured it, well, since it's dawn, it should be okay. Well, I don't know, but there was a small window right there in the attic, or the cellar, that went to straight dirt.
Okay, well, cut to the chase. What happened?
Well, that's about it.
It never bothered us again, but it
was a very intense experience.
Yes, well, and intensely, in my opinion, no reflection on you, sir, idiotic. I mean, something that evil, that bad, something growling at you and keeps you there all night long, and you go back and go down into the basement? Please. Maybe at 19. Now, Wild Card Line, you're on the air. Hello.
This is Stephanie in Federal Way.
Hello, Stephanie.
Yeah, this happened to me. It would be New Year's Eve, 79 into 80.
All right.
And I had been living in a communal house, and the guy who owned the house and his girlfriend were, I don't know, I lived a sheltered life, and they were into what I've later found to be black arts.
Oh.
And they were talking about, you know, becoming possessed so that they could get power. And I eventually moved out of the house and was dating the guy's brother.
Really?
Yeah. And it was going along because he moved out of the house, too.
People like that do sacrifices and terrible stuff like that. Are you aware of that?
I wasn't then. I am now.
Could have been the virgin sacrifice of the day had you stayed.
Well, that's kind of why I left, because it was just too bizarre. And we were going over there kind of to do the family, hi, it's New Year's, thank you for inviting us to your party, but you know, we're just making our appearance and then going home. And I remember that they had this strange print of, it looked like a fairy woman, but she had Stonehenge reflecting out of one eye. She was wearing a pentagram necklace and some other things that I have since learned were symbols of the black arts.
Right.
Well, we get up and we're walking up the porch to the house. They've got a raging fire in a fireplace. I know the house is warm when you open the door. Well, his girlfriend opens the door to greet us, and something ice cold that felt just like a knife stabbed right through my chest. It was probably about 6 inches wide, or, you know, from top to bottom.
Yes.
And about a half an inch wide thick of the blade. And I felt it go in through the front and come out through the back.
Something seen or something unseen but felt?
Unseen but felt.
Gotcha.
And it was just ice cold. I mean, I've never felt, it was like dry ice cold.
Yeah.
And needless to say, I did not walk into that house, 19 or otherwise. I turned on my foot, and I just took off running.
Now, there is a rational reaction.
And I have never been a distance runner in my life. I've never been a sprinter.
But
I ran 5 miles that night.
Covered a lot of territory real quick.
And it turns out they still don't know exactly what happened, but within a month, my boyfriend's brother committed suicide in that house. Within a month after this party, and within 2 days after that, his girlfriend committed suicide.
Wow.
And to this day, when this happened in Portland, Oregon, and to this day, if I'm anywhere near the street that this house is on, I just get nauseous.
Give it good, wide berth.
And, you know, I just say that there was something there that told me not to go in, did not want me in there.
Well, you reacted rationally, unlike my previous caller, and I appreciate your call. Thank you. That was rational. That's what I would do. Out of there, cover as much distance as quickly as possible. Now, I don't mean to be too hard on that caller. He was 19 and hadn't built up, obviously, a lot of brilliance yet, but I mean, after being pinned down by a growl all night long, are you going back there? And are you going to the basement? And are you going to a little tiny area in the basement? Well, I guess. Maybe at 19. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey there.
Hey there.
How you doing, Art?
Okay, where are you?
Oh, I'm actually out in Long Beach, California.
Long Beach, okay.
Okay. First, to give you a setting of it was really, really weird. I know I was pretty foolish to go through with this, but I spent a few years out in Nagoya, Japan. That's on the mainland of Japan.
Indeed.
And there's this notorious spot. And ever since I was a little kid, I've always been kind of curious about, like, you know, to see little haunted places and, you know, experience, you know, see if I could actually experience something.
Yes.
So throughout the whole country, there's this spot. It's named Aokigahara Jukai. It's at the foot, like, at the foot of, like, Mount Fuji. It's called, in English translation, it's the Sea of Trees.
Yes.
And it's known for, as a, basically like a suicide spot throughout the whole entire country.
Here we go again. Yes.
People basically wander in and they never come out. There's, because of the volcanic rock or whatever, even with the compass, you can't find your way in or out, so it's like highly recommended by the government. They even have signs like posted within the
trees. Suicide has been developed to a fine art by the Japanese.
Well, I can imagine, because it's supposedly been back from when we were at war with them.
Anyway, I don't have a whole lot of time here, so what happened?
Well, anyways, I somehow talked the person that I was with into, when we made our trip to Mount Fuji, to taking me to the forest. So we went ahead against her wishes,
mm-hmm.
And so we started walking in. We walked. It basically looked identical. Everything looked basically the same because it was like the same type of trees and everything. And I made sure that I wouldn't get myself lost. So we got ourselves to a point, and I saw somebody run by the trees, and so did she. It was a male. He was about probably in his mid-20s or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we were both pretty shocked because there was nobody goes there. I mean, this poor young lady, I had her shaking. She was really scared to go up in there. Anyways, I said, "Look at that." And she said, "I see it." And she was just trembling. I said, "Hey." And I ran to the trees. were the trees where he was. And as soon as I got there, there was blood all over this tree. And there was a piece of rope, and it had been, it looked like it had been ripped, or somehow it was like mangled.
Well, you were in the forest of the dead.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Actually, the police go in there only once a year to get the people that have killed themselves, because they get lost themselves. They have to actually mark the trees.
Yes, what this man says is true. It might not seem it, but in Japan, suicide. And so, you know, with what we've heard about suicide tonight, what you've told me is no surprise. That would be an intensely haunted area. The people who commit suicide don't really leave, you know.
Well, the feeling I was looking for, I think I actually experienced it.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I looked on the tree. There was actually like a little straw. It was made out of straws. It was a cross, and it was pinned right onto that exact tree where I seen the person running, where we actually saw the person running.
Yes.
And there was I don't read Japanese myself, but she translated it, and it was basically he had written his death note on the tree.
Yeah.
And as soon as I got up to, I yanked her over there to see it, and it's basically about 5 or 10 seconds later of just standing there in shock, raindrops. It wasn't even really a gloomy day, but it was almost nighttime, so it was kind of dark. I'm sure you could kind of get the picture of how it would look in a forest.
Yes, just a moment.
Dark.
Just a moment left.
Okay, the raindrops started hitting in like a 10-foot circle just around us only, and she fell to her knees, and I had to actually pick her up, and we got the blank out there.
Well, of course, another totally rational reaction. Thank you very much. In the forest of the dead in Japan, where the attitude about death and dying and religion and everything, for that matter, is so different that it's hard to contemplate here. On the international line, you're on the air with Ghost to Ghost AM. Hello.
Hi, this is Nancy.
Hello, Nancy. Where are you?
I'm in Germany.
Germany. What part? What part?
In Bavaria.
Bavaria. Okay, Nancy, what's up?
Well, I have a ghost story from the early 70s when my husband and I had bought a great big house. And he was a policeman and usually worked at night. And even on the nights when he was home, strange things would happen, but he never seemed to notice any of this. And it started when lights were flipping on and off, and I thought, My young son, who was about 3 or 4, was getting up at night and leaving the lights on, so I thought I would try and trick this ghost and pretend like I was going to sleep and see if it was my son or what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
So one night I probably fell asleep for a nanosecond, and the lights went on. So I ran out there, out in the hallway, to see if it was my son, and then there was knocking on the window. So I ran and jumped back in bed, and my brother used to babysit in that house, and he said the handles on the dresser used to flip, and so he stopped babysitting. One night I was downstairs ironing, watching TV.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes you can, when someone walks in the door, you can feel, if you're not looking, you can feel somebody came into the room. So I thought my husband had come home and he was trying to scare me, and I turned around and I saw this extremely huge, I mean, it was like, he was so big, this man, and I just saw it for just a second.
Yes.
Like he was dressed like with a short skirt, kind of, whatever that's called.
A kilt?
Yeah.
A kilt.
And a thing going across his chest. And he was just huge. And I said, this is my imagination. I turned around and I started to iron again.
Yes.
And all of a sudden I felt a spot in the back of my back.
Yes.
Like it was a hot poker.
Right.
And the hot started to spread out in a circle across my back. And I jumped up and I said, okay, but you have to stay downstairs. I'll go upstairs. You stay downstairs. And I ran upstairs and locked the door. Of course, that's not going to do anything, but, you know.
That's all right. It's rational. It's what I'd do. Lock it anyway. Sure, it can walk right through and munch on you, but lock it anyway.
And then it finally, this happened like about the first 2 or 3 months we had moved into this house.
Yes.
And my husband, you know, thought I was nuts. He just wouldn't even listen. And so I used to teach catechism. And so the last time, I had all these papers spread out on this big dining room table, and there was a big chandelier above it. And all of a sudden, the table started to shake. And I thought, oh, no, because it was in California. I thought, oh, no, we're having an earthquake. And I looked under the table, and the cat was sound asleep. He hadn't moved. And I looked at the chandelier, and it was still. And my left arm started to flop all over, and I'm right-handed. And so I just leaned back in the chair, and I just said, look, ghost, I don't have time to play.
Huh.
And very slowly the table, you know, stopped shaking. And
yes.
I never heard from him again.
And it sounds like you left California by a long way. You're in Germany.
Yeah, well, then I moved to Washington, and I think he followed me there, but it was never as bad as that time.
How's Halloween in Bavaria?
Actually, it's
not a big holiday there.
No, but today is a holiday.
Ah.
Everything shuts down today, being November 1st. It's I can't remember what they call it. It's kind of like our All Saints Day, and it's you know, it's a very Catholic area, and nothing is open. Usually they have flea markets on the first Saturday of the month. Nothing happens.
Well, I guess when you're in Bavaria, every day is Halloween anyway. Listen, bless your heart for calling. Wonderful story. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night. Bye-bye. Good night from the homeland here. Well, all right, folks, that does it. That's Ghost to Ghost AM, 5 hours worth. It's been my pleasure. As it will be every year, I have an opportunity to do it for you. One thing it should have done is to have caused you to stop for a moment and think, as you listen to some of these obviously true stories, there's got to be something more. From the high desert, good night.
Nights in white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty I'd always miss with these eyes before.